Blog Talk Radio.
Gideon!
Leave below in streets and fall boxes and trade thousand on a chalet.
Come we tell them this time
I'm here. He's asking for everything.
Every time.
And you should never know. You should know.
Everything that I have said. I've seen many situations. I had to avoid their
illusion.
Now getting caught in their confusion. Escaping this mental invasion. The man escaped this invasion. Seems I did you right, so why should I fight? Just to prove the point at this time. See that there is pride behind all this fight. Cause I said to see what's wrong from what's right.
Yeah.
And it is so hard to express my feelings. Oh Lord, about the misconceptions of my teachers. Prophecies
revealing.
Oh Lord, beg
it. Oh, yes.
Oh Lord, help us now that segregation is rising.
Rising.
Well, man, I be reap by them so. Oh,
man, I be reap by them so.
Ambitious mind, elevating so. Ambitious mind, evil see them as so. Frustration turns most friends into foe. Working day and night trying to overthrow. To counsel together, plot against a brother. Robbing a barrel, who is the mind of a hero. Lastly, the wicked gets a turn back flow.
Oh, the wicked gets a turn back flow. It seems as if you're right, so why should I fight? Just to prove a point at this time. See that there is pride behind all this fight. Cause I first should see what's wrong from what's right. Can it be so hard to express my feelings? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, about the misconceptions of my teachers. Oh, boy, boy, yeah, can't you see prophecies revealing?
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, Lord, help us now that segregation is rising.
It's rising,
rising.
When something learn them and teach, they know we are no rich. Ignorance of the fool, yes, yes, no one speak. Oh, eating the people, they must straight out of seat. Everyone feed themselves, but place on a seat. Eat on the glory, the earth to the meek. Hey, hey, if I love, I weak. Harvest time, how when them are going to reap. You think the judge are dead, but see my life on a seat.
Them
so. We all got to reap what we sow. Man, I be reap what we sow. Yeah.
Yeah, trying to figure that out. You know, always go ahead and get everything 100% perfect, but we'll try. You know, the topic of my show tonight is dealing with that enemy from within. We got a lot of enemies from within. And I'm hoping the brother call in, because this is like part two of what he had talked about just about a year ago. But he and I had a discussion, and he didn't want to add certain people to the list. And there's certain people that need to be added to that enemy list. We need to stop bullshitting about the whole thing. Well, we got that obvious list. Entertainers and some other monkeys out here doing ills in the community. We got that obvious list. You know, a lot of those Tea Party in the Black Tea Party and these fools and Black conservative types. And the question you always got to always pose to these Black conservative types is, what is a Black conservative? What the hell are you trying to conserve? At what point in history are you trying to go back to and bring that back? So, So I was adding some more people to the list. Certain individuals need to stay on that list. And I always like to deal with one individual in particular. My show just won't be right unless you hear some Jesse Lee Peterson.
No, I've often said that thank God for slavery because, you know, had not, then the blacks who were here would have been stuck in Africa. And you see how bad Africa, everybody and mama trying to get out of Africa and come to America. And so God has a way of looking out for folks, and he made it possible by way of slavery to get black folks into this country. But 100% American. Proud of it. I thank God that he saw fit for me to get here. Never mind that, you know, we were sold. I mean, my ancestor way back, way yonder when, were sold by Arabs and blacks to white folks and got us here. The white man came and brought us to the greatest country in the world. The ride over was pretty tough. But, you know, it's like riding on a crowded airplane and when you're not in first class. It's a tough ride. But you're happy when you get to your destination. And so the ride was tough over here. The pain for freedom was tough, you know, because in life, if you want to gain something, you got to lose something. No pain, no gain. So it was a tough. The pain was tough, all for the sake of freedom. So I thank God that he got me here, and to show my appreciation to the blacks who suffered as a result of coming here, and the Arabs and blacks who sold us to the white man for going there and getting us and bringing us here, I want to say thanks.
Yeah, that was Jesse Lee Peterson, people. You send your hate mail to Jesse Lee Peterson. I forgot his damn email address. See, when we got people like that speaking up, and people see that damn face, it's like this guy has no clue, no history, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, but he's showing how much he loved those who hate him. Self-hating Negro. But you got a lot of other individuals out here. Now, I had some other clips I wanted to play of a few other people, but I'm just going to go ahead and read some things about them a little bit later on. They go ahead and show you that, hey, look, these are pain profiteers. I say again, these are pain profiteers, the ones that you constantly see in front of the mics and with the cameras in their face all the time. These are also our enemies from within because they know exactly your hiding spots, you know what you're going to do. They know everything about you. So they share with other individuals, and they know how to go ahead and make a buck. And one of the problems I was having was part of the discussion I was having with an individual is these people that's supposed to be speaking on our behalf. I wanted to go ahead and look basically at how rich some of these fools have gotten. Tell me that these people really give a damn about you. They talk about the problems, but they don't do shit. But they don't do nothing to go ahead and stop the problems. Here's the net worth of Tavis Smiley. Now, Tavis Smiley is worth $10 million. Constantly going ahead. Now, at this point, Barack Obama is going ahead really been turning my stomach with a lot of nonsense. And Tavis Smiley is always in Barack Obama's ass, just going in deep, going deep and hard, trying to go as deep as deep and harder, deeper and harder than any conservative out here. But Tavis Smiley is worth $10 million. This person, like I said, is constantly talking about black folks' problems, what black men should do, and he ain't got something, but he ain't take none of that money and say, okay, well, let me figure out some way to go ahead and help my fellow black man. Hell no. He just went straight profit off your pain, and they're going to continue to profit off your pain. Kanye West, another one. Now, you know this fucker ain't really done shit. To me, when he put that line out during Hurricane Katrina, George Bush don't like black people. This motherfucker worth close to $100 million. And I don't see a whole lot of shit he's doing. I don't see nothing attached, nothing out here with his name on it. No, I mean, if you got an organization and you're supposed to be for black folks, put the information out there. Get some black people involved. Don't have it all hush-hush and under the rug, because all you're doing is you're just going ahead and sucking in money. You're crying and saying that, hey, look, this my organization need money to go ahead and help the problems. But everybody who knows, who's been in the game, who knows something about the whole charity thing, nonprofit thing, know that individuals will go ahead and talk about the problem, put together a little program that lasts for a couple of years, and then the money run out. And at the same time, these fuckers go ahead and put a lot of money in their pockets. Al Sharpton's National Action Network is $1.1 million in debt. I think it's a little bit higher right now because this information is a little bit old. But it didn't stop him from going ahead and getting his almost $300,000 a year salary. But Al Sharpton, another one worth close to $6 million. You know, talking about black issues, is that's a moneymaker. And see, again, when people go ahead and try to go ahead and tell me, well, they doing good and all this other stuff, they ain't doing good. Because if that was the case, then they'd be going ahead and trying to make sure everybody else's, their income is in the millions. Share that with everybody. Share that knowledge. Share a little bit of that wealth. Show us how you got there. Jesse Jackson information, man, it was hard to pull that up. I had went to a lot of sources. Ben Jealous. He also worked about $8 million. Ben Jealous in charge of NAACP, which I heard he stepped down. I didn't see the information on that. I should have looked that up a little bit better. But not too many people who are really talking about the problems want anything to change, because it helps them go ahead and put more money in their pocket. Put a lot more money in his pocket. Theirs. But one thing that I did notice that it was all these guys. So the entertainers, I go in with them. I got a problem with a lot of them. But I didn't see not one of these so-called female activists making as much money as these guys. Something else they had in common. Majority of these guys are religious types. You need to question their motives. Who the hell are they getting that money from? What's the point of them getting all that money? They ain't doing shit to go ahead and change the problem. They don't give a damn about changing the problems. Keeping the situation the way it is helps justify their position, and they can go ahead and run around and go ahead and get those people who are making it. Go ahead and get these people who are making it, who are making money, who bringing in cash. Got their little business, they're making money from the entertainment field. They go ahead and make them feel bad by saying, hey, look, you need to get back to your people and do this such and such. But at the same time, they ain't doing nothing but being fucking poverty pimps. It's enough of them goddamn poverty pimps. You need to deal with them motherfuckers. You need to confront these goddamn people. Because they doing more harm than the fucking drug dealers. Because they influenced a lot more individuals out here. I got Louis Farrakhan. His net worth, and his shocked me. I think his was a lot, because I looked around and it was roughly $5 million, his net worth, which I really feel is a lot higher than that. I just think that, you know, that's the kind of, they might be hiding this shit a lot better. The Nation of Islam might be hiding this shit a lot better than anybody else. I really feel it's a lot better. I mean, a lot higher than that. I had another clip I wanted to go ahead and play. But, you know, I always got to go ahead and keep people focused. And one of the reasons that I try to go ahead and go in and put this message out there, because we need to go ahead and do something about this situation. If you got a silly ideology, and I call it silly, if you got a silly ideology, but at the end of the day, just realize one thing, you know, black people. You can take off all them layers of clothing, your hats, all the other stuff, but at the end of the day, you can still lay down black person, you'll wake up being a black person. So let me play another clip from our favorite house Negro, Jesse Lee Peterson.
And we have a special Out in the Open panel tonight. They'll be with us throughout the hour to talk about self-segregation. Molly Secour, who writes a column on race relations for blackcommentator.com. CNN contributor Roland Martin. Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, founder and president of Brotherhood Organization for a New Destiny. And James Edwards, host of the Political Cesspool on WRL-MAM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome all.
Thank you. Good to be here, Paula.
One of the most striking things about talking to these kids is the extent to which they downplayed the issue of race and why it is all the white kids sat together, the black kids and Hispanics. Do you buy that?
I don't. You know, a lot of white Americans are afraid to talk about race and morality concerning black Americans.
But I was talking to black kids, too. Yeah, they said the same thing. They said, we want to be around kids that have something in common with us. We're in schoolrooms with them all day long. Lunches are, you know, the bit of time that we have to relax.
People tend to be comfortable with folks that they know. But when it comes to white and black, the white and black issue, most black Americans are racist and resentful of white Americans. And so they don't feel comfortable around white Americans. And instead of facing their racism, they say, well, it's the white man. White people are racist toward us. And white folks are fed up. They are afraid to speak up for fear of being called racist. They are now afraid to hang around with black Americans because fear of saying the wrong thing.
So you're telling me these kids at this school in this racially diverse city are all racist?
I'm not saying
black kids?
I'm not saying that they all are, but I am saying that most blacks are today, and we haven't dealt with the issue of racism from black Americans toward white folks. Because blacks have been told that they can't be a racist by their quote-unquote leaders, and so racism within the hearts and minds of black folks concerning white Americans have not been dealt with.
All right. Do you not like me? Do you not like James? Do you not like white people, Roland Martin?
First of all, the nonsense that Reverend Peterson is spewing is ridiculous. Here's the reality. Folks live in areas where they live, so they go to school. You have an understanding of where you're simply from. I went to Texas A&M, and it was interesting when students from large cities would sit with students from large cities. Students from rural towns would sit with students from rural towns. Texas A&M is 86% white.
Right.
Not a student there. That is the reality. Now, the issue is what happens when you only stay in that particular area. I don't buy this nonsense that they're racist. People are simply comfortable based upon circumstance, based upon where they're from, based upon culture, based upon knowledge. That's what it boils down to.
Roland is in denial, Paula. Let me say, Roland is in denial. I wrote an article for worldmandaily.com looking for one strong white man, a white man that would speak up. And I received truckloads of emails from white Americans who said that I am afraid to deal with black folks for fear of being called a racist. I got it from preachers and non-preachers alike.
James.
Paula, Reverend Peterson's absolutely white. As a white American, I think that what's portrayed throughout the controlled media is that self-segregation is something that we should apologize for, when in fact the exact opposite is true. I think that it's perfectly natural and healthy that one would choose to associate with members of their own families, people with whom they share the same values and traditions and heroes. There's nothing enriching for white school children to be bussed across town to gang-ridden schools in which they have to walk through metal detectors before they can report the class.
This is a racially diverse school. I mean, we're talking about a school that actually where they got rid of segregation years ago by federal mandate.
The idea of white people are afraid to be called racist, first of all, we need to get over this whole thing of, am I a racist, am I not? The answer is yes. You cannot grow up in America and not be racist if you are white.
Are you saying white people are racist?
I'm saying all white people start off being racist.
That's
grow up in this culture without being racist. Once you accept the fact that you have an inherent it's in the air.
So do you agree with me that most blacks are racist and all whites?
By the time I die, I will be less racist. But it's only to the degree that I work against being racist.
But what about the Reverend's point that he feels that the blacks are more racist towards whites than whites towards blacks?
Racism equals prejudice plus power. Blacks in this country do not have power. They do not have. No,
you don't have to have power.
Right.
You don't have to have power. Quality. You do not have to have power to be a racist.
You have to have power.
Black conservatives are discriminated against by liberal blacks, like this guy here. They're called Arkansas.
All right, hang on, hang on. You've got to hang on. James, you get the last word, and then we'll come back to all of you.
He doesn't have any
power. Time out. James, you get the last word, and then you all get to chime in after the break.
Only liberal demagogues believe that human nature can be carried away on an integrated school bus. There's nothing wrong with European Americans standing up for their culture and their traditions, and you want that for minorities, but we want it for ourselves. And I think many white Americans are seeing through this charade, and I'm one of them that's beginning to speak out against it.
Do you consider yourself a racist?
No, I consider myself a man who's proud of his cultural heritage.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Hold your thoughts. Hold your fire. We've got a lot more to discuss.
Now, you see, that conversation needs to take place to go ahead and expose a lot of individuals who's speaking up on our behalf. I mean it this way. You got Jesse Lee Peterson, who just all out sold out. That's why I played that first thing on how he go ahead and he loved slavery. Without even going ahead, he didn't even explore it because he made a lot of fucked up points. Something else he just said was, hey, this is an enemy. This is an enemy. This is an enemy from within, because he can mingle amongst us, and people who don't know him, he can slide on up to some of our brothers and sisters, especially the young minds, and go ahead and manipulate. So for him to say that blacks are racist, he don't even know basically what the definition is. And that lady, she broke it down. It's basically dealing with power and economics. Basically racism is where you are suppressing a lesser group, and that lesser group is something dealing with numbers. You got lesser people, and then you go ahead and doing whatever you can to them to go ahead and pretty much take their cash and just to go ahead and not move up, not be mobile, not do anything. So I can go ahead and give you a better definition, go ahead and give you a strict definition from the different dictionaries and everything, but a lot of black folks know what racism is. A lot of white folks don't. They're in denial. But the problem that I'm having most anything, a lot of black people are in denial of it, and they go ahead and want to go ahead and sidestep the shit a lot of times. You got to confront these damn people. And in order for our situation to change, these people must be confronted, and we cannot afford to go ahead and deal with having any more of these people walking around, talking shit, and getting in front of the camera. I bring up the Trayvon Martin issue. Because it wasn't so much one thing that people seem to overlook. The law was put in place. This is what I hear. The law was put in place to go ahead and to find George Zimmerman innocent. But, this juror that came on TV the other day, her name was Maddie B29 or 28 or whatever. Like a bingo thing. Hey, have her come on and say, hey, look, she just felt that George Zimmerman was guilty. And looking at what happened recently with this fool, he's got some problems. But the other jurors, a few other jurors just say, hey, look, Trayvon Martin was a thug and all this other stuff. That had nothing to do with this, with the reason why George Zimmerman killed this boy. And not too many people want to go ahead and stand up and go ahead and point that out. And for me, when I another part of this enemy from within is you had the Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Ben Jealous and a few others run on out, come on out, protesting for this. And these fuckers, man, all they did, this was a big fundraising ploy for them. This was a big fundraising ploy, and it's real sad and it's real shocking that you got a lot of people out here that's willing to go ahead and let these people, give these people a platform instead of throwing bricks at them when they get on stage. Throw something at them. Throw words at them. Get them caught up in what in the rhetoric and the lies they get to tell them. Don't let them get away with none of that. Let me play some Malcolm for you right fast.
Oh, ask you, please, who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate? You should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you. We teach you to love the hair that God gave you. Here you way out in the middle of the ocean, can't swim, and you worried about someone that's in the bathtub and can't swim. We don't steal, we don't gamble, we don't lie, and we don't cheat. And that also deprives the government of revenue. Because you can't get into a whiskey bottle without getting past the government seal. You can't open a deck of cards without getting past the government seal. Here's a white man makes the whiskey and then puts you in jail for getting drunk. He sells you the cards and the dice and puts you in jail when he catches you using them. So he's against us because we fix it where he can't catch you anymore. We take the dice out of your hands and the cards out of your hands and the whiskey out of your head. The most disrespected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. We will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in the direction of our women.
Greetings and welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, Kavir, man.
Hey, what's going on, Chef Rob?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Good, man. You want to chime in on what you just heard? About, you know, you can go ahead and go anyway, what Malcolm X said, or my topic. Or
I was going to talk on the topic of the enemies within. And I watch the media, and I think everyone should be a suspect. Even, white, black. When I see black people on, I'm suspect nowadays of is this black person allowed on TV because they passed some test? Because, like, for instance, I never hear a black person call out Jesse Lee Peterson or these type. Like, who does Jesse Lee Peterson represent? He is not as if the black community is divided between, Jesse Peterson sellout, and then all the other black people. They have a Roland Martin or somebody on there to debate him. Black people aren't divided like that. This guy is on there specifically to represent white folks. White folks, I don't care if it's a liberal white person, a conservative white person, they call to put Jesse Lee Peterson on the show. He doesn't have his own show. He doesn't have the power to put himself on TV. Somebody white put him on TV for a reason. and they have a black person on there to counter that person, and they never call them out on it. They never call out why they put Jesse Lee Peterson on TV. He doesn't represent anybody.
That's what just about all of them, man. And Jesse Lee Peterson got a channel. He got some stuff going on the internet. I got another clip that it wouldn't play. I got another clip that came straight from his internet TV show. So, and he says some outrageous stuff on there. I'm going to get that up here real soon. I don't want to mention that one, but that one is outrageous. And he's sitting there having a conversation with another white cat, and you'd be shocked at what he say. And I agree with what you said.
Oh, I believe
that's what they do. And they got a bunch of them. They got a bunch of them they can parade in this place to go here and go here and say the nonsense, but nobody confront them. And Fox News is notorious for that. They got a bunch of those sellouts come through. I don't think we should just go here and mention him and that type. We got the others that go here and come out. You know, and they're supposed to be speaking on our behalf. They need to be confronted too. They need to be confronted
Absolutely.
Too because. It's like I was reading earlier on how much the net worth of some of these individuals. Look at Tavis Smiley, who talk about black issues, but he worth $10 million. Now, that's black folks' money. They gave you some of that money. I mean, like, when do you go ahead and really get back? They don't get back. He went on his bus tour with Cornel West and all this other stuff. They didn't go ahead and – all they doing is going ahead and taking. Going ahead and talking about black issues is a big money maker. Doing something about it, oh no, they can't do nothing about it because then they would go ahead and make people equal, and then there wouldn't be no way for them to make cash.
Yeah, I look at brothers like, I definitely see your point, but I look at brothers like you had mentioned Benjamin Jealous or whatever. I don't what's his first name, but I know you're talking the NAACP guy who's standing down. Like, he's on the show, he's on, you know, TV all the time, and I'm totally suspect of him. I don't want to begrudge anybody who's racially mixed, but it seems like they put these black people on here, a lot of these black dudes, they're either homosexual or they're, I'm serious. Just look at some of these shows. A lot of these dudes they put on there to represent black issues or black homosexual, or there's some half breed dudes. Like they're on there. They must be meeting some kind of test standard because I've never seen a dude on there. I've never seen a black guy who get on there who says I'm not down with homosexuality. Or I don't like abortion, or I don't like whatever it is. You don't hear like a black person represents black people. Now they might put a Jesse Lee Peterson type. They might put a Larry Elder on there, who you know might be quote unquote conservative. But you never hear a black dude, like a black guy from the ghetto representing black folks, who is not down with these liberal causes. They have to be, they have to meet the standard. These people put them on there to represent the homosexual agenda, the feminist agenda, or whatever agenda it is they're trying to push. Then they qualify as somebody that can represent black people. So I'm suspect of all.
And the thing that I see that too. I don't disagree with you. I agree with you, but I'm gonna add a little bit more to it. They speaking on our behalf, or they speaking like they know the majority of black folks. This is how black folks talk. No, motherfucker. Something else came to mind. It's another brother that they have on MSNBC. His name is Peterson also. And I can't remember what he was asked. But when they ask him certain questions, and they don't go ahead and be like, hell no, that ain't how the shit go. They just go along with it and try to clean it up. You know, man, no. And they try to go ahead and suck up to these fools a whole lot. Brother Kometu, your line is open. Speak anytime you want.
Okay, Chef Rob. How's that?
How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm good.
It's good. What do you feel about the enemies within?
It's always good to hear Malcolm X. And one of my specialties is focusing on the real enemy we're facing, and it is the enemy within. And I don't mean we're the enemy. There's a difference.
Break it down.
The enemy within is a condition, a sensibility. Like last time I talked to you about the Christian sensibility, it's a sensibility that we have that keeps us enslaved. It is mm-hmm. not our nature. That sensibility is not our nature. That is artificial.
Mm. You think that a lot of these individuals, just like this Jesse Lee Peterson and, you know, a few of these others, you think the thing is that they just still got in their mindset that they should go ahead and keep protecting their slave master?
Of course. In fact, you're not going to make it in the mainstream media without being a slave that licks white butt. There's just no way around it. Our problem is we've got to learn to detach from their limelight and create our own circuits of circulation of our own stuff.
But it's kind of hard because you got these fools that's out there speaking on our behalf. You know, and they're constantly going here and talking to these fools. I'm going to play a clip a little bit later on. You know, just it's like a minute, which I, you know what, I should just go ahead and play it right now. Let me go ahead and get that right now, because this is pretty much relevant to go ahead and show that, hey, look, these guys are not, they're not working with us. They're working against us because they also using Martin Luther King to go ahead and make some silly points. They using Martin Luther King, that 50th anniversary on the march and all this other stuff. They also using this to go ahead and be a fundraiser. So I want you to listen to this when we come back, because I'm gonna keep playing this, and I got a few others, but this one I want to go ahead and keep playing, so people get the message.
I got something to say too. I got something to say about that too. Go ahead.
Okay.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Yeah, greetings and welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. You know, you don't hear none of these so-called black leaders or these people speaking on our behalf say nothing like that. Now, do you?
You're absolutely right.
Now, this brother, when this cat said that, it was back there, and you don't see none of them saying that. And I stress this point. You don't even hear his kid saying something like this now. This is real.
As I said, there's a part of American history that white folks don't talk about and black folks don't talk about. I mean, Martin Luther King was talking about the Homestead Act. And there's been other things relevant to the Homestead Act where they would just say, if you just go out to the West, put up a boundary, that land was yours. It was given like acres at a time, hundreds of acres. You just go out and just say, that land is mine, I'm going to claim it. And in come all the subsidies with it. And at the same time, like he said, but they're telling black folks, oh, y'all supposed to go out there and pull yourself up by the bootstrap. But we can't go out there and just start claiming some land.
Right.
They made sure it was a white only thing. Everything to white only. Like, you look at something where they have some program it comes out where they're gonna do some military subsidy, or they're gonna do some grant to build, you know, a pipeline or something. Just go straight to white folks. Black folks have nothing to do with that. They'll do some road crew, let's say in like Mississippi. They don't have no industry, but they'll build some roads. They'll just hire some white folks, just throw that federal money to the white folks, and just support their whole the whole business, the whole industry. Black folks had, is cut out from that.
And you know, here's something else. You don't hear any of the so-called black leaders bring that stuff up.
They don't mention none of that.
Their whole argument right now is we need to go here and get jobs. We need to go here and march for jobs. We don't have jobs. You know, I feel that, hey, look, if I got close, I would probably go here and throw something at them, throw a stick at them, and I'd probably be good. Then I'd probably crack them in the head. We need to get the shit knocked out of them so they wake the fuck up, because jobs is what's put us in this situation. Because they took our businesses. You ain't talking about going here and creating no businesses. Now you wasting my fucking time. Because like I was trying to say earlier, they go here and they get the little grant money when they nonprofit type shits. And they go here and they'll have some job situation when the grant money run out in 2-3 years. And they didn't put their hands up. Well, we did all we can do. We can't get no more grants. But these fuckers driving away in brand new vehicles. All they shit taken care of. And why we still stuck with the bullshit. You want to say something, brother?
Yeah, I was just going to say, we have to remember how the European first got over to America. When he came to America, his first issue, the first land that he had, he got through Moorish land grants.
Mm-hmm.
So the pocket they're leaving out of the whole movement from slavery to now is that not only did the cracker lie about where he got us from, he was also confiscating our land as he was creating America. If it wasn't some other people's land, he was taking.
Yeah.
That's the part we forgot and we lost.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing. I want to go ahead and see some of these individuals now that's profiting off our pain. Go ahead and say something about that. Let me
you
play
know,
the other.
I think I'm going to expand the issue to the original issue that we were displaced off our land and they got here.
But you ain't gonna hear none of them go ahead and try to repeat any kind of history. They want to go ahead and bombard you with our history started at the slave period.
It's slavery.
Right. Yeah, that's what they want to go ahead and hit you with. They don't want to hit you with anything prior to that. They don't want to hit you with anything because that would go ahead and make a whole lot of people look foolish. Let me play some more of that Jesse Lee Peterson interview on CNN. Okay, I don't think that that's what most people intended when they moved out here, that this would become a segregated community. I think that I'm talking about African Americans moved into communities like Lithonia in the hopes that they would be welcome. It simply didn't happen.
As African-Americans began to move into Lithonia and Southeast DeKalb County, white people began to move out.
We continue our special hour now, Divided We Stand, Self-Segregation in America. That minister we just heard is talking about an affluent and largely black suburb just east of Atlanta, but it could be anywhere in America. Let's go back to our Out in the Open panel now. Molly Secour and Roland Martin, who think that self-segregation is natural, not always a reflection of racism. Also with us tonight, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, who says blacks are often responsible for self-segregation and victimization, and James Edwards, who is a white separatist. Welcome back. Now, you have been highly critical of African Americans. You think a lot of crime and poverty follows where they are. Take a look at that community.
Well, look.
Is that a place where you could live?
No, it absolutely does follow them, and you know that it does. And I think CNN outdid themselves in finding the strong, affluent black community, because that is certainly the exception and not the rule. 9 times out of 10, integration is a one-way street that runs directly through white neighborhoods. And I think that we've seen that throughout the last 40 years as the failed civil rights movement has manifested itself in our daily lives.
You know what, Paul, let me make something very clear. It is offensive for him to project this level of ignorance on national television. First and foremost, have you even been there? You understand the community. You haven't.
Absolutely.
Watch your people. That's Ross Perot. Here's the whole deal with this community. You're dealing with African Americans of a particular income level. Okay. So when you talk about self-segregation, it's not just based upon race. the piece laid out this whole issue of race, but it's also based upon income.
You know what the minister said? He said very clearly, we fight disrespect almost everywhere. We don't have to be white in this community.
And people who live in that neighborhood also talked about when they lived in affluent white neighborhoods, when they walked their kids down the street, people perceived them as being the nanny, and they said they got sick and tired of that level of injustice. So they said, wait a minute, I don't want to have to sit here and spend $1 million on a home and somebody thinks I'm a nanny. That's offensive.
You have several dynamics going on in Atlanta. Out of Los Angeles, for example, many blacks are moving back to Atlanta because of illegal aliens, the illegal alien situation in Atlanta. They're running blacks out of their community. Also, blacks are separating themselves because of their own hatred or resentment toward white folks. They don't feel comfortable, and instead of looking at that, they're blaming white folks.
You think they're moving to Lithonia because they don't like white folks?
You saw that one white family, and you heard the lady say that she was afraid to move in. Because we are so separated, thanks to the so-called civil rights movement, the blacks and whites are so separated, we haven't really got to know
Wait
each other.
They're separated so because of the civil rights movement? Let me let Molly jump in.
Belmead is a community in Nashville, very affluent community, 99.9% white, I would say. I have never heard of anyone saying this area is self-segregated. This is where white people live. This is where affluent white people. But no, we deconstruct a neighborhood in Georgia because affluent black people are there, and we're calling it self-segregation. We don't call that self-segregation in Belmead, where white people.
That has something to do with populations you're talking about. Whites being the majority population.
Why do we deconstruct black people? Why do we put them under a microscope and say, my goodness, look at these people. They would like to have a nice life.
New Birth Missionary Baptist Church was run by Bishop Eddie L. Long. That church now is 9% Hispanic. They now have a Hispanic worship service. What you're seeing is Lithonia is becoming a diverse. That church, 25,000 members, right there in Lithonia. That is the reality. It's a reality.
I want to just disagree with one thing that he said. You know, crime does follow blacks who don't have two parents in the homes. Crime and violence and lack of moral character, right?
So white folks don't commit crimes, right?
But where there are two parents, you don't tend to find out-of-control crime.
You're talking about self-segregation, but forced integration is not a path to equality. It's a march towards totalitarianism. And all of these liberal talking heads that want to crow about the wonders of diversity, spend a week on the mean streets of South Memphis and you'll graduate with a degree in race relations.
Wow.
I don't believe in forced integration.
I guess your neighborhood is really safe, huh?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, right.
Stay with me. The conversation, I promise, will continue on the other side. Save it.
I'm sorry.
There is still some time, so.
Hello?
Hey, Chef. Anybody there?
I'm here.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello. Welcome back to Chef Rob Show. My fault. I didn't be with Davis. Got it screwed up. The one thing I want to go ahead and address was that some comments, I don't remember exactly, and I don't even have them in front of me, but they were kind of offensive, the part I heard. And with Bill Cosby. And individuals who made money but will not tell you how to go ahead and live. Bill Cosby at one time did give out a few scholarships, a few grants, help a few people go to college. But where is he now? Also, I heard this is that thing they had at the Apollo with Al Sharpton here recently. That nonsense. That nonsense. I couldn't even stop watching that. And this room full of individuals, and none of them saying, "Hey, look, let's go ahead and let's create an industry to go ahead and deal with some ills in the neighborhood." That's the biggest problem, is that it's there are no businesses there. You know, you don't tell them that you need some job, somebody else to come on in, some Arabs to open up a grocery store, some Koreans to go ahead and do a hair place. Let's go ahead and create some kind of industry. And pretty much farming would go ahead and take care of a lot of problems, because you can go ahead and put a whole lot of people to work with a 5-acre farm.
I would agree with you, you know, on that. But my problem is the Al Sharptons of the world lack the credibility to start all of a sudden talking about profit making industry. If I don't see Sharpton, a version of Sharpton with an MBA who knows how to make a business, run a business, employ people, how to do certain, you know, contracts and legal stuff and get businesses done. And when that person can stand up, you know, some CEO, MBA guy, stand up and say, this is how we can work together and make some business. That guy I would listen to. I'm not going to listen to the guy who's talking about let's go protest and such and such, and then he goes, all of a sudden he's going to turn around and start making some business. That dude is not a for-profit guy that I want to hear. The kind of people that they put in those civil rights guys, they don't have the ability, they don't have the intellectual capital to start talking about, we're going to go out here and make some businesses. Or they would have done it a long time ago.
The media makes Al Sharpton relevant. Okay? The media makes him relevant. It's basically up to us to go ahead and show them that he's irrelevant. But you don't hear that. You know, and I feel that the more of us keep pounding that message that, hey, look, he has turned his back on where he came from. Yeah, too many of them turned
it. Say that again? Remember, I think that the people we call civil rights leaders,
right,
they're not civil rights leaders, they're jailers. And we are so educated to the level of ignorance that we can't see basic things for what it is. Sharpton's agenda, Al Sharpton's mission, has nothing to do with what we need.
Yes, true.
Nothing. My point is this. When you have civil rights, you exist in slavery. Because if you go to any country on the planet, when you have a government-organized country, the people of that country who come from that country never have civil rights. They have natural rights.
Right.
So what I'm saying is they have siphoned us off on, it was a Twilight Zone, I think, episode I saw, or one of them kind of shows, where the people it was actually a movie, where the people thought they were living a daily life on planet Earth, and come to find out at the end of the movie, they're on a satellite floating out in space somewhere they ain't even on Earth.
And it was like something every day was night, man, pretty much.
Right.
So I can't remember
what
that was, but
He had that missile power to outdo the aliens that was doing him and doing their people. He was looking for Shell Beach.
Right. Yeah.
And they finally realized they went to the edge of the satellite and realized that they have to recreate their own world because it was stolen from another planet.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good movie. I remember that one.
That was
in the '80s or something.
Yeah, and that's how they isolate us and have us fighting a civil rights struggle when the whole time it's a land rights struggle. And in order to have any respect in any nation, you have to be able to step to those nations and governments as a nation, organized and dealing with them as a nation. Am I correct?
I would tend to disagree with that.
If a Mexican national or an Israeli national or an English national come over to America and commits even murder, they can't throw him up in the penitentiary in Joliet or in Jacksonville or in Angola. They have to send him where? To the consulate, to his embassy, and back to his country, and they have to deal with him. That's how diplomatic relations are actually conducted. We are outside of that level of existence. Therefore, we're in that bubble on the satellite being ruled by aliens. I didn't bring the movie up for nothing.
Yeah,
and the other thing is,
I would tend to disagree.
Enemies.
Oh, go ahead, bro.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I would tend to disagree. I think the only to this point that the man with the biggest stick, or the biggest gun, or the biggest jail, or the biggest power, the big man on the block sets the rules. So until you ready to step up to the plate and take on the big man, then you got to follow the rules that the big man is laying down. Now, you can come up with your own. You can have your own circumstances. You can have your own whatever. But the big man ain't got to recognize that. As soon as you want to step up to the big man and you want to take down the SEAL Team 6, you want to take down the FBI, you want to take down the SWAT team, step your butt up. Until then, you better follow the rules. Or you might get your head slapped out.
I don't think that's indigenous. I think that's good. We are to people.
See?
I think we are enslaved to people that we think are our leaders.
It's one of those things where I see us keep looking for some hope. And these individuals out there speaking, we're caught up, you know. So, a lot of our people are looking for some hope, but you got more people that's drowning out than people that's looking for hope. But the people saying, hey, look, these motherfuckers ain't gonna do shit for you. You know, you go ahead and need to do what you're doing. You go ahead and look at asses shaking, making it rain, and all that other bullshit, all that other nonsense is out in front. That's the old crazy shit out here. That's the stuff that's making more sense. That fantasy materialism shit, that's making more sense than reality.
But you know what, though? I think we leave it up to fate and a Christian sensibility when we don't examine why this is happening. When people have that disposition to be making it rain, to be just running around selling dope and hurting people and doing all kind of crazy shit, what we're not looking at is the children that become these adults.
I was going to bring that up a little bit later.
the structure, and I'm not just saying school, I'm saying the family structure, the structure of what the child experiences becomes what they play out when they become adults. So the nigger machine, nigger with an R, the nigger machine that keeps putting out the same ignorant nigger, that has not been even touched. None of the leadership, which is not our leadership, have even mentioned attacking back. When we have real leadership that stands up for us, because nobody in the world has leaders but Negroes. But when we
Mr. Holocism puts it like in his YouTube videos, it's the nigger manufacturing machine. And see, here in Chicago,
I think it was over the week.
Say it again?
I said nobody has shut that down, but go ahead.
Over the weekend, there was a lady who killed her 17-year-old son. I want you to do the math real quick. 17-year-old son, she's 31.
Hey.
Think about that. She's 31, killed a 17-year-old son over an ice cream bar.
Oh.
Now, you talk about babies raising babies, and look at what we got going on. Okay? That shit is amazing. In Sauk Village, S-A-U-K Village, here in Illinois, this lady kills a 17-year-old son. They got into an argument over an ice cream bar. And there was witnesses. She stabs him to death.
Jesus.
So this is what, you know, that whole thing is really, really messed up, because you got babies raising babies, and they don't really – there's no guidelines, no books on how you to go ahead and raise your kids. You know, you pretty much got to go ahead and deal with, you know, what you have in front of you, and try to go ahead and give them what your knowledge of the world. But if you ain't got no knowledge of the world, then shit, you're going to go on some bullshit.
Right. And we organize based on bullshit, because we don't understand that when you don't have a community to support the raising of a baby, that you drive the person creating the baby, the person abandoning the baby and the baby, you drive them nuts. Because when you exist outside of your community in our culture, you are crazy. You start to do crazy shit. And so no single individual woman should have to raise a child by her own, on her own. No two parents, should, male and female, who stay together, should have to raise that baby by themselves.
You know, something else.
That's not right.
Something else, real quick. The it's more seen as raising kids. Raising kids is more like a burden. Then they don't see the importance of raising your children. You produce these children, so you got to go ahead and raise them up to be pretty decent adults. But people don't go ahead and seem to realize the importance of raising the kids. They see a lot of kids as being a burden. Oh man, I got to do this for you. Oh, what the fuck? And me being a chef, man, I hate the If anybody doing it, you listening, man, you need your ass whooped. I hate when you go here and sit your kids in front of the TV and think that the TV is supposed to occupy your kids' mind, or you feed them garbage. I'm really, really against going here and let me go get that McDonald's and shut these kids up. If you spend a little bit of time going ahead and made a meal and include your kid as they're getting older, that gives you time to talk to them and see what's going on in their fucking head. Let's not deny that. When we go ahead and look back at the black family structure, when you had that meal at Mama's house on Sunday or whoever it was, you had that gathering, believe it or not, our families were a lot more together, and that meal is very important. But you got individuals like, here, let me go ahead and throw this greasy-ass fucking burger, and that's how they do throughout the rest of the week. I don't have time to do that. You're a damn liar. Because the time you're using to occupy your time, what you're using to occupy your time with, it's most times it's some bullshit.
For real.
So let's go ahead all this shit is also dealing with more enemies from within. You let a lot of other shit raise your kids, and you need your ass for that. Go ahead, brother.
I would say that there's three enemies that we should never allow to hook up. That is the enemy within, the enemy in your camp, and your obvious enemy.
Yes.
Anytime you are dominated,
enemy from within and enemy in your camp is simply same individuals.
No. Well, the enemy within would be personal. The enemy within your camp is another individual outside of you.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is we have to always be vigilant not to let those three elements that exist line up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the enemy within is our own white Christian sensibilities, our tendency to be influenced by our enslavement, right? The enemy in our camp is the people we end up trusting who have not resolved their enemy within issues and are easy picking for people who want to do us harm. This is what I call black leadership. That's the enemy in the camp.
Yeah.
You look like that's Obama. You look like us, but you are nowhere near one of us and work in our interest at all.
You know, you go ahead. Go ahead, brother. Finish your statement. I apologize.
Go ahead.
My thing with trusting Obama, because I felt like, okay, well, finally, we might get some things done. This brother here, and I go, and like I said on previous shows, this guy walked these streets here in Chicago. So he knows the problems here in Chicago, but he ain't addressed none of these problems. And I constantly see him going ahead dealing with other shit. He ain't dealing with
what. The way he came to office for Chicago politics was some straight gangster shit.
Yeah, Chicago politics always been rough, man.
Always. And he came out of that machine out of nowhere for some straight gangster shit.
Yeah. And it's based on gangster shit, man. It ain't based on no laws and doing right or wrong. It's based on gangster shit.
For real.
It ain't never been right, man. Shoot. And if you try to make it right, they get rid of your ass. Look at here in Washington.
Right. And I think we underestimate the programming that Clark has put into us so that they could still manage us at this date. I mean, you know, really, a lot of our problems come from critical thinking and not having enough community-based critical thinking. And when I say community-based, I don't just mean that there's niggas in the street you don't know. I mean, your sister, your mother, your grandmother, your father, your brother, your cousin, your uncle, sitting down on that ground level and understanding this basic shit. See, mm-hmm. we're not organized. We're not organizing for success. We're actually still organizing to fit in, and we haven't faced that reality of that enemy within.
Hold on, hold on. We're organizing to fit in. We're also organizing for a party. Some more shit to go ahead and blind you from the fucking truth. Think about that. You got more people want to go ahead and get together to go ahead and get drunk and have a good time, but you don't want to go ahead and try to organize and stop the bullshit going on.
But remember, trauma, when you have trauma, trauma-based programming is mm-hmm. the best way to brainwash people. When you are suffering trauma, hell, you're going to be doing something trying to alleviate that pain.
There was something that happened here about some traffic stops and these lights and stuff out here in the western suburbs, right, in Chicago. And they were giving out, they were making like damn near like over $1 million a year off these different traffic tickets. And they head over to the Woodfield Shopping Mall. White folks got together and said, hey, look, if you're going to keep on giving us all these tickets, we're going to stop coming to the mall. They didn't go out there protesting and talk that bullshit. They stopped coming to the mall. They stopped shopping with these people. And believe it or not, they made some rule changes, goddammit. And that's this what my
that?
Point set up is this. We have a lot of the power in our hands. When you go here and you working hard and then you'll go out and shop and buy all their bullshit. Why you know stop aiding in your own destruction. Stop buying all their bullshit. Don't make no damn sense. You go ahead aiding in your own fucking destruction. Paying them to go ahead and keep fucking over your life. That don't make no sense to me. Let me play this other clip right quick, brother. This one's a little bit long. I want you to listen to what's in. I always got to hear some Dr. Claude Anderson.
And so this morning, in the time that's been allotted to me, I want to talk to you, as I said, like Geronimo. But I want to be like the great European philosopher Diogenes who walked through life with a lantern in his hand, saying, I want to lighten the darkness because I'm in search of an honest man. But like Diogenes, I want to walk through this temple and through Black America with a new movement I'm trying to create. I want to find not necessarily an honest man. I want to find some Black people and some white people that understand the problems in America. I want to find somebody that understands in America that contrary to popular myth, Black folk are not progressing in America. Black people are going backwards. In comparative proportional terms, Black people in America, where you were in 1850 in this country, you have not progressed. You're still in your same dilemma, contrary to anybody tells you. And you see, I want to find, like Diogenes, I want to find a Black person that understands that Black folk are not progressing. But more importantly, I want to find somebody, Black or white, that don't mind being Black and want to talk about the racial problem in this society. I can't even find that with my lantern in life. We got three or four major Black organizations in America. Three. The Urban League, the NAACP, the Rainbow Coalition, and one other one. I can't even get them to focus on the issue of Black folk. One wants to take care of cultural diversity. One wants to be talking about multiculturalism. One wants to talk about minority issues. The other wants to talk about oppressed people. And I asked them across the country, why don't somebody talk about Black folk and the problems of Black people? And so I'm looking, like Diogenes, for a person that understands the history of this country, because I want to understand the problem in America. And the problem is not what you all have been taught. The problem is not poverty. It is not unemployment. It is not unwed teenage parents. It is not food stamps. It is not public housing. It is not drug abuse. Black people only got two problems in America. The first problem is that you've been systematically locked into the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game. That's your major problem. And that's what Dr. Price directly and indirectly is telling you about every Sunday morning. You have been locked into a no-win situation. That means that all the wealth and power in this country has been skewed over 400 years systematically into the hands of the majority white society. Black people don't own a significant amount of anything to be able to control their lives. Whites in America right now control almost 100% of all the income, the wealth, the power, the resources, the businesses, the privileges, and all levels of government. You cannot compete. And I'm tired of hearing people telling black folk, why don't you compete? Compete with what? What are you going to compete with? They keep saying, well, black folk can run fast and jump higher. That won't make it. It won't make it. And let me tell you what monopoly is. Monopoly means that all the wealth and power has been skewed based on skin color, going white, yellow, brown, black. And if you've never played the game of Monopoly, let me show you how it's played. I play it every year at my family. It means that everybody, when you sit down, you're given a certain amount of money and wealth. Black people never got their 40 acres and a mule. Now we're playing this game of Monopoly. And let's pretend for a second in this auditorium that whites got $1,000 to play the game of Monopoly. Asians got $500. Hispanics got $300. Indian got $100. And blacks got $50 to play the game of Monopoly. Now, never having gotten your 40 acres of mule, you don't own any land. You don't own any land. And if you don't have the money, you can't put any houses and hotels on the land if you got lucky and had some. Now, when you roll the dice in our hypothetical game of Monopoly, and you roll the dice and your number comes up on the wrong piece of property, what happens to you? You must either go bankrupt or go to jail. And that's the monopoly game that black folk are locked into. And when that happens to you in life, when you only got two alternatives in life to either go bankrupt or go to jail, that is called an underclass. And black people in America are systematically being forced into a permanent underclass. We will be a permanent underclass by the year 2013. And you got about a 2.5 year window left. If we don't do some very specific things and start to come up with some very cogent strategies, comprehensive strategies of doing some things to focus on that number one problem of redistributing the wealth and power back into the hands of black folk, you can hang it up. Don't worry anymore about retiring after the next 2 or 3 years. Don't worry anymore about going to college. It ain't going to work. The doors are going to slam shut on black folk. And what I'm telling you right now is we're going to have to get it together fast. And to do it, you must first understand what I'm going to be telling you this morning. And my speech is going to be divided into three parts. I'm first going to tell you about the problems of black America realistically. As Cochise and Geronimo said, I'm going to give you the truth about the current state of black America, point one. Two, I'm going to analyze it for you. And three, I'm going to give you the solutions that we can do together to come out of it. Okay? Now, we got a very serious problem in that monopoly game. We're going to have a converging forces, social forces coming across this country. About 8 major forces are going to push us into that understructure and that underclass position. And let me talk about 3 or 4 of them right quick. First thing, across this country, you're going to have an increasing amount of conservatism. Now, I want you all to understand up front what conservatism means. So I don't care whoever uses that word, you know what it means. Conservatism is a new code word for anti-blackism, okay? Except now a conservative can stand right in your face and call you, tell you, and confess that he's a conservative, which means he is a racist and not tell you he's a racist. Racism right now, we got racism all over America, and I can't find one racist. And what I'm telling you right now, before my book even hit the market, I'd already predicted in my book that you're going to have a cutback in welfare. I predicted in my book they're going to catch people like in Texaco. And they just caught Avis discriminating in blacks in North Carolina and South Carolina. And they just caught Circuit City, Sam's, Walmart. I knew they were going to try to cut out the single mammoth districts. I knew they were going to go after affirmative action. I knew there were going to be riots all over this country that are coming. I talked about this a long time ago in the book. Because that's what conservatism means. Conservatism comes from the root word to conserve. To conserve means to hold on to what you've got, or those who ain't got, as my mother said in a third grade deaf education, you ain't going to get. That's what conservatism means. And it means nothing else. It means maintain the status quo. It means use every device that you have to give the pretense that what you see is normal. And right now there's a conservative move in this country going from the White House across this land to the Congress that says whatever exists all over this nation and in Los Angeles is normal. They want you to believe that it's normal to go out in Los Angeles and see all the drug abuse and all the crime, all the poverty, and all the suffering of black folk lying and sleeping on the streets, drugged out, doped out. They want you to believe that's normal. That's what conservatism means, maintain the status quo. It also means to reinstitute white authority, white values, so you hear them talk about family values and all these other kind of things, and also white superiority. So when people start talking about they want to go back and be a conservative, you ask them, what are you trying to conserve? When my people don't own anything and you own 100%, what have I got to conserve? When you hear blacks going around screaming about they're a black conservative, you ask them, what are you conserving? Tell me one point in history that you found something that you want to conserve. Don't let people run that game on you about being a conservative. You tell them, say, fine, you want to tell me what are you conserving? And when my people never had anything, why would they want to be a conservative? So the biggest problem we're going to have is conservatism when it goes across this nation. And we as black folk got to understand, now it's not all whites that are conservatives. There is an element that's got everything that want to make that. It's the greed over need. They want to hold on to everything. And we're going to have a massive flow. Everybody's going to be talking about conservatism. You're going to see people politically switching, talking about they're moving to the far right. And what we have to do is understand that, and that's going to create major problems in this country. One, you see an increasing amount of negative hostility towards black folk. Every piece of research in the country tells us that, even from the Jewish organizations, that you're going to see more anti-blackness now and in the future than you've ever seen in the last 60 years since you left the civil rights movement. Two, you're going to see organizations all over the country now, paramilitary groups, Aryan groups, Vipers, Free Man, Skinhead, Baldhead, all kind of groups that are organizing and optimistically expecting and anticipating a major clash in this country between blacks and whites. We've had 28 states in the United States now to pass concealed weapons laws. That's specifically so some of the white contingency groups can carry weapons and arms at all times. That's why you have such a major thrust in the National Rifle Association. That's why they're controlling most of your politicians. That's why you have such a major anti-governmental effort in this country. You hear people say, we want to go back to states' rights. We're anti-government. We want to get rid of the federal government. It's not that they're against government. They know that in history, the only people who've ever saved black folk has been the government, twice, the federal government. And if you eliminate the federal government by downsizing the government, black folk no longer have an ally. And if a clash occurs, you got nobody to come to the rescue a third time to help you. You see, you were pulled out of slavery by the federal government. You were pulled out of Jim Crowism by the federal government. There are contingencies in the country that says the next time there won't be a federal government to pull blacks out. And you hear them talk about their anti-government. That's what they're talking about. They're not against government. And later on, you hear me tell about why they're not against government, because you see primary wealth in this country. The primary responsibility of government is to move wealth and to move power. And that's how the dominant society got its wealth and its power, by using government. But now they want to make sure black folk don't have access to it. That's why they're anti-affirmative action, but I'll get into all that a little later.
Hey, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob. I'm here on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, brother, you still there?
Okay.
All right, brother. Had me worried there for a minute. I want to ask you a question. What he said, a lot of the stuff you're working your way from the back toward the front, what he said, does that apply today? Because he said by the year 2013, a lot of things will be happening. He's a little bit off, but he's pretty much right. That's the direction that's going on. I think they're stretching a little bit, but he's pretty much right, don't you think?
It's already happened. Because you can't even work with regular jobs as a supervisor level unless you either gay or firmly attached to some other white male agenda. So 40% of our working class, of our professionals particularly, with degrees and upper education, work for the federal government or some level of government.
Mm.
So when you downsize the government, that's the conservative code word for fire them niggas. Get rid of the niggas. And what we've got to be as a people is we've got to quit being dependent on white media and white education like heroin and crack.
Right.
You know, it's like a pregnant mother that smokes crack. And then the child is selling crack at 2 years old, putting it through the little mailbox. We've all seen that video and shit. And so now you have multi-generations of crack users from the world. And so that's the level of problem we're dealing with education, with the process of socializing our code of ethics. We don't have control over that basic shit. So when we walk outside this door, we're going to get hit with bricks of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're not fundamentally taking care of business to be able to interface with the world in a legitimate way.
Right. You know, that brother has a good, he has a good plan. You know, it's Powernomics, and, you know, he's doing some, putting stuff in place. But what I hear...
I think he was right.
Right. He's correct in a whole lot of stuff. I think it was off a little bit in terms of the year, because it's 2013. This thing was made in the 90s. And I think he was off a little bit, but everything else he was saying about what's coming to be, he's right on about it. And
I don't know
his,
if he's off, because I think we're a permanent underclass, like he said, right now.
Yeah.
Because no amount of education, no amount of white nothing is going to lift us out of the poverty they're putting us in further. You cannot fight a systematic destruction of your people with an individualist mentality and method. That's stupid. And that's the whole point of civil rights. It's to take you out of your reaction to Jim Crow. Right? Your reaction to Jim Crow was, fuck these crackers. We'll make our own shit. Right?
Right.
Then along came civil rights, like goddamn Black Widow and shit. Along came a spider and shit. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
When civil rights came, it softened off that self-motivation energy that we had maintained from the time they said they freed us, which we know they didn't, but the time they said they did. We had started building family structure. We started doing the shit I'm talking about. We started taking control of our educational institutions. What we didn't get rid of fast enough and we took for granted was the influence of that Christian sensibility. Being raised by religious crackers who eat babies and sell their own children, right?
Mm.
And we took on that sensibility from slavery and we continuously overlooked its influence. And so the decisions that we make are contradictory, they're chaotic. Because that's the whole point of having a Christian sensibility. You know, when they went in with the mercenary and the missionary to colonize other countries, they didn't do it just to be exercised or some shit. They did it specifically to gain mental control over the spirits of those people.
Shit, yeah, they got shit going on like that now. That shit ain't changed.
Right, and they continued it. That's the part. That's the part we keep overlooking. Not only did they traumatize us and do it to us, we continue to behave as though they only did it to us then once, and now
right.
We're in another place. And in
but
reality,
see, that's again, that comes with the enemy from within, because we got the all these fuckers out here who's speaking on our behalf, and they trying
right.
to go ahead and say, hey, look, ain't shit changed? Shit then
right.
actually got a hell of a lot worse. Because
but
you go ahead, you look at
social.
MSNBC and, mm-hmm. and that commercial, and they talk about, hey, look, there's still more work to be done, and we came a long way and all this other shit. No, we haven't, you motherfucker. We didn't got behind.
And they can't tell you what work needs to be, and they can't tell you what work still needs to be done. You can't get one of them to tell you, well, what do you mean?
What do you mean? Yeah, you know, show us that progress report. Show us what we're doing in advance. Because you got less black businesses today than you did back there 50 years ago.
And every solution they offer you takes you further into slavery. So what I'm saying is we've got to, on a basic everyday Negro, black nigger level, a street nigger, brother, sister level, we got to understand that we don't have no leaders, that nothing in America is in our favor except our own attitude. And we have to grow up and take care of our damn selves. And if we don't learn to get along with each other, we will be destroyed. Bottom line. We're not willing to do that because of our Christian sensibility. When I'm going to college, I'm about to be an MBA, I'm going to make $90,000 a year. I don't know what you're talking about, nigga. You stuck in the past. That's an individual's idea, and that's his own. Everybody have an opinion. All God's children got traveling shoes. Ain't going to let nobody turn it. It all turns into the same goddamn conversation. That's taking you through 75 years of civil rights in 5 seconds.
I laugh, but I've heard that same shit. I've heard it
all the time.
All the fucking time. I'm saying, man, and it seems like it gets a lot worse with like the next group of individuals saying, I'm going to college. And they seem to be a little bit more selfish. They don't give a fuck about what's going on. And it just gets worse.
That's that hyper-individualism. And you know, I'm in Colorado, Chef Rob, but I'm from where you're at. And
I know you are.
I understand that you got some, you know, you got some Catholic mafia from all different ethnic groups level of lockdown control going on the daily lives of people in those regions.
Mm.
I know the people. I know the communities. I grew up in a white community in the Midwest near Chicago.
Yeah.
There was no niggas us and the Hamiltons, and that was it. And so when you see it being ignorant as a child without any filter, and then you try to become conscious, and then you analyze what you went through and what you witnessed, the picture is much deeper. So these immigrant groups have always vied together since probably the 1900s, the early 1900s, these white small ethnic groups were accepted and adopted as honorary white. And that's what solidified the white supremacy that started with slavery. It's in that book by Nell Painter, The History of White People. So what our people got to become wise about is that nothing outside of what we create is in our interest. We are the absorbers of all the world's bullshit. We collect nuclear... spiritual waste of everybody.
Oh man, I'm trying to remember when I heard it, and I wish I could have got that clip because I was remembering Cornel West saying that black folks are the conscience of white people in America. I'm like, nigga, what the fuck are you talking about?
The moral
and he
conscience
said it
of
in
white
his...
people. I remember that.
Huh?
I remember that. He said we're the moral conscience of white people.
Right. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, I'm trying to remember, you know, what context he was saying there, but it was just the fact that he would say some shit like that. Just say, I'm like, man, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, yeah, and ain't nobody, you know, we supposed to be looking out for them and telling them what to do. Ain't nobody, that shit ain't happening in reverse.
Right.
It's a whole
Mammy and Uncle Ben. You gotta be Uncle Ben, nigga.
Uncle
Ben. You gotta be the beneficent Negro that helps the white people and puts them back on the horse when they fall off and say, don't talk to your mother like that. That's your mother.
Yes.
We got that mammy nanny thing. That's why the butler with Lee Daniels and Oprah Winfrey is doing so well. We're not catching on. Well, Carl Anderson wasn't off on the years. He's correct. He might have been off. It took place in 2010, not 2013. He might be off that way. But
might be off by that.
We're already socially permanent underclass. But the problem is this. When Carl Anderson made that speeches, we already were there.
Yes.
Like, you know, you have each generation that comes into consciousness and they do the best they can with what they know all the time they're here. But sometimes we don't click and catch on to the previous shit that already happened.
Yeah, I get you.
You know what I mean?
Let me
his comfort is great. But we're already there.
No. What's going on, brother? You all right, brother? Peace to you, right?
I'm all right, brother. How you doing?
Righteousness. I'm all right, brother. Where's the other brother? Is that brother from last time on there?
No, he's on the line, too. He just got here. You guys got here at the same time. Y'all had a meeting or something?
I don't know, boy. You know, I just kill it. You know, he was here defending all these. He's probably a conservative nigga. He's here defending Farrakhan and Obama and all these niggas are house niggas.
Honestly, you know, the topic of my show was dealing with the enemy from within, and it's actually something I call it a revised list because it came from that brother's show because he gave a list of individuals that the enemy was within, and I felt that he should have added these people because let me go back and back up and go ahead and bring up some stats because you guys got here a little bit late. One of the things I brought up was Tavis Smiley and his net worth is $10 million, who's constantly talking about black people's problems. Al Sharpton's net worth is a little bit like $6 million, and he talks about black folks' problems. Ben Jealous, he's worth and he talks about black folks' problems. And I got a few other people, Jesse Jackson. These people are worth in the millions, but, you know, how did they make their millions if they weren't talking about black people's problems? But they don't seem to be trying to settle black folks' problems. So, let me bring up something else. Okay. See, you know, this that stuff is – how do I put it? You know, it's like one who's their actions are hostile toward the black people they're supposed to be representing and talking to try to protect. And they are not doing what they said they were going to do. Like with Louis Farrakhan, he's another one. The list that I got, that how his net worth, and I feel it's a lot higher. They say his net worth is like $3 million. I mean, like, hold on now. At some point, you got to go ahead and say, hey, look, these people are going ahead and talking about the problems, profiting off our pain, and want to keep having you contribute to the whole thing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but these have to be individuals. They're like enemies from within.
They're talking about us as the problem using code language. They're not talking about our problems. They are acting like they're talking about our problems, but they're actually talking about us as the problem.
For real, brother. And that's the problem as well. Because, you see, the thing with these Negroes now, right, like, if there ain't no money, they ain't touching it. You see what I'm saying? Look at the other, that Million Youth March the other day. They want no money in it. So you didn't see Sharpton and Alicia there. And Messi Jesse. You didn't see none of them Negroes there. You see what I'm trying to say? They stayed away. I heard there's only about 1,100 people who went to the Million Youth March. Foolishness. Huh? And then I heard that most of the people that went there was grown up, 20 to 30 year olds. What kind of foolishness is that? Huh? What do Negroes want to do is come and make money out of us, make money off the people. That's why I said you can't trust a lawyer ever. Because you got to understand with an attorney, lawyer, or judge, anyone who's in the legal system, who works in the legal profession, a black man, you got to understand, he can't function in a world of righteousness. He's nullified. He ain't worth a shit in righteousness. He needs this stuff to keep on going. You understand? You need it to keep on going. You can never trust an attorney that says he's trying to help black people because he profits off your pain and the bullshit that niggas cause. Confusion that niggas are going through in 2013. But go on, brother.
You know, let me play a song real quick.
Well, you hear me say no? Without any apology. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. In the 50s, my mother, sister, run go England. Now them gone America, them turn American. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. So you left Clarendon and go a Brixton, and you check the things cool in a Liverpool. But Enoch Powell didn't know that things would get a blow. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. And I listen to the news, I get confused. A black man shine, the Ku Klux Klan. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. If you're white, it's alright. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. Are you better attack? It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Now the fire have a burn, the blood have a run. At time Big Ben really tumbled down. And see that I say, him have a burn a chalice. But me say, him should have burned down the palace. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Hear why? When you're there, you say, hey, sir. When you go there, you say, a cup of tea, please. It's no good. Rastafari, no. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. When you're there, you say, hey, sir. When you go there, you say, hey, mate, it's getting late. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Now them shoot Regan, them shoot the Pope, them shoot after the Queen, and you take it to a joke. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. It's no good to stay in a white man country too long. Blacks in England, what is your plan? Blacks in England, check the time. Skinhead them now, check them crime. Blacks in England, find your land. Cause it's no good to stay in a white man country. Yes.
Greetings and welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to get to this brother right away because he wants to go ahead and clarify. Because what I did was I felt I fed off his topic. So I want you, Brother Kayla, you there?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I can.
I want you to go ahead and tell me what you feel, you know, how you have set up your show to be dealing with the enemy from within.
All right. Well, like I said, I wish I was at my computer's off right now. I could read right from my blog, you know. And I said this is what I mean by the enemy within. This is you got to be this very, very clear, okay? First of all, we have to look at Black America in a context, you know, in a context. We, like Holop always says, we don't really have a collective interest right now. We have collective aspirations. I mean, we know shit's fucked up and we want to get out of the situation we're in. That's a given, okay? But unlike Black America is not a nation state, by which if we were a nation state, right, we could easily identify who the enemy within is because or you get ready to do something, they're basically championing the cause of people that are trying to undermine the interests of your state. Let's say we had interest in one country, another country had interest in the same country, and we were competing. Well, the enemy within will basically always side with the enemy of their country. They always find a reason to undermine what the people want to do. You know, the main thing about the enemy within is somebody who wants to undermine what black people are about or what they want to do. It does not mean that all the time. Let me give you an example. Let me be very clear about this. Now, understanding black America, right? When people call, like myself, will call myself nationalist, I've tread on very careful terms when I do this, okay? I say, okay, black America, for the most part, chose integration, okay? And being American, everything like that. You know, people like myself who have always been nationalists and never really bought into the America and all this kind of stuff like that. I said that I did not make my the nationalist movement did not make our case. We allowed them to define us as extremists, radicals, black racists, black super, all these stupid things that black people wear with almost badges of honor. When you go to a lot of black militant websites, they spew the same the nonsense that discredits them. Yeah, I believe in black supremacy. I believe in all this stupid stuff. Whereas anyone who's a student in history will know that the people who are nationalists were always the moderates. They were always the pragmatists. The people who pushed for integration and forced themselves on white America were the extremists. These are the ones that were the extremists. They've done a good job of basically looking at the 60s and saying, hey, Martin Luther King was a good guy. He talked about integration. I have a dream. They did also their job with making it seem like all the people who talked about black power were terrorists, they were this, they were that, and everything. So my whole thing is this. Now, I want to basically let people see the side of a nationalist where I seem like a pragmatist. There's nothing wrong with doing business with Africa. There's nothing wrong with living in Africa. There's nothing wrong with us building ties economically, socially, politically with Africa. And there's nothing wrong with black people saying they want their own independent nation state. That's legitimate. I use examples. Israel, the Italian-Americans, Germans. Everyone in this country has ties to their homeland. Everyone in this country has a stake someplace else. The Chinese are connected globally. Japanese, same thing. So I'm basically trying to align our movement along with what other groups of people are doing. The Mexicans, they come here and they send money back to Mexico. They never lose who they are. That's legitimate. That's proper. That's legitimate. Now, what I'm saying is people that basically know what the right thing to do, but they choose to basically misrepresent us because they're getting airtime and they're usually using their own extreme rhetoric and all this stuff like that to build an audience, to build a movement. And basically, they will also go out of their way to undermine legitimate movements just so they can basically stay on top. That's what I mean by the enemy within. Now, if you have a movement and your movement's not doing well, I mean, you're an enemy, you know, and you're just not successful. But when you basically see that somebody else is doing something and everything, and you make it your point to basically do that just for the sole purpose out of envy, jealousy, and the fact that you don't want to see black people get ahead, because if they do get ahead, you won't be in the spotlight. That's what I mean. You know, if somebody's doing something and they're basically saying, you know, I don't want health care reform to pass. Well, if black people got health care reform, then they're going to stop coming to our rallies. That's an enemy within, because you're putting your personal aggrandizement above what people want, what people need. You know, and I say in black America, we got too many people that basically mislead people just so they can keep their own platform and what they're saying going. Okay? Now, basically, when you talked about Farrakhan and all this stuff, all these people like that, now, you know, a lot of people are treading on dangerous ground. I admit that. You know, but I really haven't found any evidence where basically they would basically say, okay, well, we don't want. The stimulus to come down to black America, because we came down to there was an influx of cash into South Side of Chicago, like $4 billion from Obama, right? Do you think people would be as angry? Of course not. People would be getting jobs, you see businesses open, everything like that. Now, somebody that want to stop that and call themselves black just because they want to be the lightning rod to attack Obama so they can look like they're the leader. Now, that's an enemy within. Why? Because even though you may disagree about Obama, if something's going to help black people, whatever it is, no matter what your ideology is, something's going to help black people. If you put your ideology before the people, you're an enemy. If you have an ideology, you better show that your ideology is going to work, and you better have a plan and be successful. And don't blame people when your ideology, your plans do not work, because you have not basically done your homework and you have not come forward anything. That's what I mean by the enemy of them. You have people in our community who mislead black people all the time and tell us, lead us astray. Why? Because they don't want to see us do better. Because if we do better, then basically they would not have a platform to speak out of. You know, people go out of their way to make sure that there's a crime. Like you tell, like, let me give you an example. If you go to a city, I noticed for a fact that anytime you have a situation where there's no black police brutality, but there's a lot of black-on-black crime, you never see anybody talk about that. Why? Because that's not popular. You don't get a platform to use an external enemy, a boogeyman, to basically solidify your base. The easiest thing to do is to tell somebody else is a devil, and just watch out for this guy, and I'm going to be the one to protect you. Just listen to me. That's the easiest thing to do. And that's the trick the Romans used throughout history. Oh, there's these people in the Alps there that's going to invade us, so you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to have a, we have to have a curfew, we got to have this, we got to take this away from you, this away from you, because if you don't, these people, at these barbarians in the 8th gate or these enemies outside are going to take us over. So we got to contribute, we got to raise your taxes. We gotta, that's old civilization, you know, psychologically. And what we have is we have a lot of people in our community using that same psychological tactic, you know. All the time they're using that to enrich themselves, to self-promote, to sell books, to sell TVs, and they have no interest in ever seeing black people out of the situation. My litmus test was, do you believe that black people should have their own independent nation? When I have the so-called nationals telling me no, that's where I look at who the enemies are. Because if you call yourself a – now, if somebody's an integrationist, that's one thing. But you can make your case. And there's a lot of huge black middle class here. But when you call yourself a nationalist, or you say America is this and America is that, and I say, you know, something, I believe in an independent nation, and you're dead set against that, then I call you an enemy within. Because you basically have no interest in seeing black people delivered. You are using black people's pain and plight to keep yourself in the spotlight, to keep yourself relevant. You know, and that's the oldest trick in history to do. And that's what I mean, that's the gist of what I mean by the enemy within. People use black people's pain, create a boogeyman, you know, oh yeah, the white man, the crackers, whatever like that. You know, not saying that there ain't a white problem with white people or whatever like that, not saying that. But when you basically do that, and basically when you say, okay, well, why don't we build this? And then you come over with an excuse, nah, we can't do that because we got to sit here and keep fighting for it. Well, you already said that, you know, it ain't working here. You already said that this is not working. In the situation, if this is great as you say this, then why waste another 20 years in America? Why don't we start building our own? Nah, we can't do that. We can't do that. So what does that tell you? That tells you that person's not for real.
Okay, Caleb.
You know, he's not, yeah.
Caleb, let me ask you something, man. Okay, so one of the things you said was that ideology before the people. And what I'm saying is, hey, look, I see that these current black leaders are putting their ideology, they're putting profits before ideology. And that's one of the things I was addressing when I was saying that, hey, look, these are our enemies from within, because they had an agenda. They said stuff before that they are not sticking with what they on their platforms from before.
Well, it could be also, Rob. Like
that's
I said
right,
earlier,
that's right.
I said maybe they don't have the means or the. I've never thought that any of these black leaders ever had the means or the ability to do anything.
Let me give it to you again. Tavis Smiley's net worth, according to a couple of websites I looked at, Tavis Smiley's net worth is $10 million, and Tavis Smiley is another one. So, let me make my point. Tavis Smiley is another one that speaks on black people pain and please about the problems in the community. And
right.
Louis Farrakhan, which I feel
that, hey, look, the from this site, it said his net worth is $3 million. I feel his shit's a lot higher than that. He's been speaking on black people paying for a long time. Now, if you can go ahead and tell me, and Al Sharpton, his shit is somewhere like about $5 million. Ben Jealous, him with the NAACP, his shit's about $8 million. And Jesse Jackson, his shit is damn near through the roof. They don't even want to go ahead and put that because it's mixed numbers that I saw with them. When you got a way to go ahead and get that kind of fucking cash, you can go ahead. That's pocket lint for you to go ahead and help start an industry. These people are not going ahead and doing what they originally said.
Rob, let's say I agree with you 100%.
Okay, so you can't go ahead and say that, hey, look, they're not sticking. Right. They're not going ahead dealing with that ideology. Let me say this.
All right, I don't really believe. I believe that, and this is what I felt for a long time. I never really believed that there was ever such thing as a so-called black leader. You know, okay. Let me give you an example. Right. Let me give you an example. During right after slavery, white America did not have any white people in the South. Basically, black people were still a laboring class, and without black people labor, the South would have just died and disappeared. You know, the South would look like barren as Texas, you know, parts of Texas and Colorado. That's what the South looked like if it was not for black people staying in the South and helping rebuild, okay? Now, the one thing black people had in the South, right, the only card they had to play was exodus. You know, they could left the South, they could left the country, went to Canada, Mexico, and I've done a couple examples of black people making treks into Kansas, some went to California, some went to Liberia, some went to Mexico, some went to Canada, some went to Europe, okay? Some went to the North, and then the majority of them, of our people went to the North, okay? The only card black people had to play was Texas. Now, there were leaders who basically told black people that your best bet was to stay in the South and labor. Now, basically, this is the formation of black leaders, okay? The first anointed black leader in black American history was Booker T. Washington, you know? Why? When he made his Atlantic Compromise speech, right, he basically said, cast down your buckets where you are. And he made some good points. Black people need to learn carpentry and all these things to pull ourselves up. But the other part he didn't say was our labor that we're learning was going to be the benefit of white people, okay? Booker T. Washington was basically, at the time, thought that the old social order of things was that white people controlled everything, and if we basically agitated too hard, it would cause reprisals from whites, and black people were not fit to basically be senators and all stuff like that. He believed that Reconstruction, black people being senators and rising to heights of government and everything before we got the basics of modern civilization down fact was not good. Now, someone could say Booker T. Washington was an enemy within because I really believe he worked for him, he believed in what he was saying. The thing is, white people lauded him and said, yeah, he's a great champion of the Negro race. And they printed his words, you know, his words were basically printed all over everywhere. And basically, white people anointed him, picked him as the leader. Like, this was one time when white people decided they can choose black leaders are. Okay?
But I couldn't get away with that.
Hold on a minute. Let me address something real quick, Caleb. That exodus leaving from the South, you and I talked about that mass exodus leaving from the South coming to the North. But I just, my thing is that I'm talking about today's leaders. We need to know that history always. You cannot know where you're going until you know your past, know where you came from. I live by that shit. But my biggest thing right now is these niggas, and I'm going to keep on saying it, these niggas, Louis Farrakhan and all these other bastards are right now, Louis Farrakhan, his message today is different than it was a few years back. Mm. What you see now with him, you wouldn't have seen that shit a few years ago, 10, maybe 20. Let me make this point. Okay, hold on. Now, none of them people are going ahead and talking about what the stuff they're saying today is a hell of a lot different than what they were saying yesterday. And this is why I call them the enemy from within, because they know what's going on, but they ain't doing shit about it. And like I mentioned to you on my last show, They had the Million Man March. They made money before the march, collected money before, they collected money during, and they collected money after, and now they got
it.
Hold on. New economic plan. Now, that does this really sound like an individual who wants to go ahead and change some shit when they didn't get the money that they collected before during the Million Man March? They bought some farms and somehow that shit mysteriously collapsed and disappeared? No. These guys are profiting off the pain of black folks, and they need to be confronted.
All right. Now, that's what you're let me clarify something. Let's say you're 100% right. Okay.
I am 100% right.
Let's say you're right. The people
I am
out
right.
There,
I am correct in what I said. There's nothing faulty that you can go ahead and look it up and review it and check it out. I'm 100% right in what I said. They have done that. They've collected money before, during, and after the march.
Right.
Then he came up with a new economic plan. Where is that money? Where has that money gone?
Right. Look, Rob, let's say
he did it on the But hold on. He did it on saying he was going to help black people. So where is that fucking money?
Right. So in other words, basically what you're saying is you believe that people who call themselves black leaders should be held accountable and basically for their actions.
I'm saying that, I'm going to add this. Do not go ahead and try to go ahead and tell me that you go ahead and you speaking up for the black man if you ain't ready to go ahead and deal with what's going on with the black man. If you're going to go ahead and keep on doing that, go you call yourself a fucking charlatan and a con man because that's what you are.
Now we're on the same page, okay? Now we're on the same page. Based on the facts that you just gave and everything like that and the evidence and everything like that that we know, now it'll be up to somebody from the Nation of Islam and all the other organizations to refute what you said and show differently. But as far as what you're saying is that, yes, based
on what
you're saying.
Let me
just
say.
Based on what you're saying, that the organization basically is existing, is self-serving, is existing for itself, and it's a self-perpetuating problem. You know, it basically, so in other words, it has no means, even though it has the intention, it ignores real intentions of solving. Like, let me give you an example. Farrakhan says he was a friend of Muammar Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi had all that land and billions of dollars. He had $50 billion sitting in his bank account, Libyan bank account, doing nothing, billions of dollars. And he said he was a friend of Gaddafi. Why did he ask Gaddafi for some land, right? And basically some of that oil wealth to basically start an enclave in Libya and basically build schools and everything like that, show people, this is look at what we're doing over here. Something like the Vatican. He did nothing.
Wait a minute.
And then
Hold on. I can't remember where I saw it, and I'm going to do my best to try to find it because I like to go ahead when I like to say shit and know what the fuck I'm talking about. But Gaddafi did go ahead and put out some stuff like that. Gaddafi did go ahead and tell Farrakhan, hey, look, bring your people over here. But Farrakhan fed into some other bullshit. And then Farrakhan was actually going behind Gaddafi's back and dealing with the other fucking Arabs to go ahead and undermine Gaddafi. Believe it or not, that's Farrakhan's M.O. He did it to – he got a history of it. He did it to Malcolm X.
That's right.
So don't think that he wouldn't go fucking go ahead and do that. He feels he is an Arab. And also, I got stuff I got to go ahead and show what I'm saying makes a lot of sense. If Dr. Clark go ahead and pointed out this motherfucker is a phony.
That's right.
Dr. Clark pointed out he was a phony back in the damn 90s doing the Million Man March and pointed out a whole lot of stuff that was inconsistent in what he was saying.
Dr. Clark's book, Pan-African World Revolution, you know.
Hold on, Caleb. Who is that speaking?
This is Commit. You had actually started talking to me, but the other guy started talking, so I never said anything.
Okay. What were you saying?
I was just saying that Malcolm X was Dr. Clark's friend.
Right.
And he witnessed firsthand the role Farrakhan played in all of that. And the other point with that is that
Islam and Christianity and Judaism are all the Christian sensibility. And what I was saying with the initial question you asked me was, what did I mean by the enemy within? Because I gave you the three enemies, the enemy within, the enemy in your camp, and your obvious enemy. The enemy within is anyone who puts self into a personal interest above group interest.
Yeah, that's what I was
just
saying.
You walk forward in any area where the enemy within is coming from. So that's a good witness tool.
That's right,
brother.
Yep. That's what I go by. When you put a plan out there and you talk about stuff that we can do and everything like that, and not only are people opposed to it, but they're trying to undermine you. And I'm like this, and that's why I said, you know, with the whole nation building thing and everything, and I've talked to some nationalists, some people call some nationalists, nah. And all that, not only do they oppose me, but they're basically going back and trying to freaking make contacts in Africa to try to stop what I'm doing and everything. Hey, what was I got to say about you? They want us to fail in Africa so we can stay here and keep listening to their nonsense, what they're preaching.
What you just said, Jesse Jackson is doing that same thing. Al Sharpton is doing that same thing. Been jealous with his bullshit. Cornel West, that bootlicking motherfucker really makes me mad. And you go ahead and Tavis Smiley. They're trying to tell you that, hey, look, you need to do this thing right here. Stay right here. And instead, they ain't talking about going ahead and getting your own shit. Do I need to play the clip again? I think I do. Hold on, brothers. Let me again. One more again. Let me play this clip again.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Now, I'll keep playing that over and over and over. There's a message there. And the message is this. None of these damn people speaking on our behalf who, like I said, Tavis Smiley, worth $10 million, Al Sharpton, worth close to $6 million, Jesse Jackson, worth in the millions. None of them are saying that kind of shit that Martin Luther King said that, and his brother said that close to 50 years ago, or about 50 years ago.
Right. Let me say something else.
I was sounding kind of gangster with that at that last point. We're coming to get the check.
Coming to get our check.
Let me say something, though.
When I listen to these so-called black leaders who are speaking on black issues, the ones that you see on TV, it's constantly, hey, look, they're there to go ahead and tell you to keep calm while they get a check. And see, I'm going to bring this other brother back who dealt with the whole situation up there in Benton Harbor, Michigan, when Jesse Jackson came out and Ben Jealous NAACP, because this other brother was also part of NAACP leadership. He'll tell you firsthand what they're about. And what they're about is they're getting paid and to go ahead and
Let me give you an example. I've told this story many times. Let's go back down the memory lane. Remember that incident with Texaco back in 1996, 1997? Remember that?
I was waiting on you to bring that up.
Remember that? I tell the story all the time. See, the whole thing here is this whole idea of leadership. That's why I said, well, if we got blog, radio, and everything like that, let's stop freaking giving these people power. They're not leaders. Let's use talking points from Colonization Show, Holism, David Hitt, all these people out here, we got enough people basically circulating around the internet that basically got talking points and stop repeating their talking points and calling in. That's when you take the power from them. Let me give you an example. Jesse Jackson was called in during the technical crisis, you know? This is what happened. Some black people had were suing because they were passing promotions and everything like that. And so there was a pending lawsuit, right? The NAACP wasn't going to take it, whatever like that. This is after the Million Man March. It was like a charge in black America, right? White people were like, oh, man, these people are on fire. They got a million people still in Washington, right? So the political capital for the Million Man March benefited this movement, but it was taken away like this. What happened was at a board meeting, a disgruntled white worker at a board meeting was passing for promotion, right? He did a secret recording of the board meeting, right? And in the board meeting, one of the top executives said, yeah, we got to do something about those black jelly beans stuck in the bottom of the bag, making a joke about the black plaintiffs in this civil rights lawsuit. Right away, all across America, and I give Al Sharpton this, right? Back then, he was calling for a boycott of Texaco. You know, he initially was the one that called for a boycott of Texaco, and then a bunch of other people at grassroots said, yeah, we're not buying Texaco. Texaco stock plummeted. Al Sharpton, I don't know what happened with this, but Al Sharpton was talking to Texaco officials, and they were going to basically give black people franchises, trainship, or ownership to make amends. All these things were put on the table, right? Technical stock were plummeting and everything. They said, look, nationwide boycott, people are dumping technical stock left and right. On comes Jesse Jackson, right? And the NAACP, Rainbow Push, and all these people, right? The media kept quoting them every day, showing their pictures on every day. Jesse Jackson was the so-called victim, the black plaintiff. Now, mind you, this case wasn't about them. It was about what the executives saying. They said, okay, that's what you feel. We're not going to buy tech anymore. That's simple what. So Jesse Jackson gets in there, and then the Texaco figure, okay, let's settle with these plaintiffs. They got like a $500,000 piece. The NAACP and Rainbow Push Organization got a settlement, got part of the settlement. Their lawyer team got a settlement. Rainbow Push got money, and the NAACP got money, right? The plaintiffs got money. Then Jesse Jackson gets up and says, you know, yeah, we glad we Texaco did the right thing, so there's no more call off the boycott. Now, black people that galvanized nationwide who were basically organizing, passing off flyers saying don't buy Texaco and everything, all those people were told to go home. Why? Because Jesse Jackson and all these people have respelled. They've been doing this for the longest time. The easiest thing that you do is be a black leader. And if you got a name and you're on MSNBC, your name's printed in the New York Times and everything like that, the way the world works is if you show up to an event, you can magnify any situation or you can diffuse a situation.
Now, Caleb, check this out. Now, all that you just said made my point. You talked about political capital, okay? They had so much goddamn support from this Trayvon Martin thing, they could have fucking walked around and did a whole bunch of shit. And what's going on now? Not a damn thing. Mm. Think about that for a minute. Everything you said about Jesse Jackson and who came in later, the NAACP, Urban League, all these other motherfucking flunkies. Now, what's going on now? What they had, when they had it, they got the support. They had people coming down the street for Trayvon Martin. And you don't see these motherfuckers at all talking, saying shit, almost nothing about it.
Like the other day, I'm in the gas station, right? Last night I was at the gas station. And I pulled up with a couple of brothers sitting there and whatnot, you know, and I'm saying to myself, you know, what is everybody talking about that? So I'm sitting there, brothers talking. One worked there, he was outside talking to his buddies and everything. So I'm pumping my gas and whatnot, and the conversation was, man, you see Michael Vick, whatnot. And give it a year. Black people, when you should mention Trayvon Martin, a year from now, they're going to say, who's that? Who's he play for? A year from now. You know, so
right.
Not just, you know, Jesse Jackson.
But the black organizations that Claude Anderson said that have existed were not actually black. So that's the one thing I was different with him, too.
No, they weren't. They were never black.
They were never. They never started as black. And, in fact, when I did the research, it was 1979, I think, before
yep.
the NAACP actually had a black leader.
A black person. It might have been
Julian Bond might have been the first one.
But the president up until 1960, they elected the first president of the NAACP, I think it was. You know, right, but for the most part, white people were on the trusteeships, and most of the trusteeships
right,
and the people handling
money. Not only did they found it, they were the leadership all up until the late 70s. That's the point.
Yeah, up until the 60s, and then they got Roy Wilkins up there. Roy Wilkins, he was no better.
That's a clown. So the whole point is we have to have a level of responsibility and wisdom and savvy in our own people. We have to find a way to inculcate and build that. We don't even honor any of these people with the title of leaders. The other thing is, too, no other people on this planet got leaders but us. We got to check that.
We got leaders that are not elected. They're not elected. They're not responsible. They appear on television, and you see them on television, you automatically consider them a leader because they got a nice suit on, and they basically got some names under their thing on the moniker on the television screen. We call them leaders.
We used to have the mayor of Harlem. We used to have the black press. You know, we used to have black officials that the community would appoint as servants, not as leaders.
Right, sir. That's what you are. You know, servants. You know, servant. You serve the people.
If you go to your granddaddy about keeping your marriage together, and your daddy stayed with his wife, your grandma, for 55 years, and they're still together, he is serving you with his wisdom.
Yep.
So we put people who were in service to us in positions of leadership, and they weren't leaders. Because the moment
out of there. And you know what the problem is? See, white people, when they basically look around, they would never let that happen. They would never let people basically, you would never have anybody like Russell Moore calls up a white leader, because he's not. He's basically serving the interests of white people and everything, but he's a servant. He's not a leader.
Right.
You know, the only time you call somebody, a white person called a leader, when he's elected to a governorship, he's the head of a CEO of a corporation, and he got people under him, and it's like that. We have people who could do absolutely nothing but appear on television, and we basically call them a leader. Just because he sits in front of a podium and he's able to have a crowd and rile people up and yell and shout and everything, we call him a freaking leader.
That falls into the Christian sensibility, too. It's triggers and buzzwords and program releases. Kind of like in the movie The Manchurian Candidate, when you see the Red Queen or the Red Heart, you will go. You don't even know you're killing people because you program. That's the level that we are hit at with this leadership deal and with the politics.
I'm done recognizing, and I was right, and
But the people we need to worry about are our own people who support the obvious enemies that I was in.
Like I said, the bottom line is this: if somebody is the other people,
then you know that they're working in your demise.
Let me hold on.
With Jesse Jackson, he was present when King got killed. When King was talking, just like that speech you keep playing, and he put his hands in King's blood. Then he has a track record of. He also ushered in the use of the term African-American. He also went and did some Israel shit when he went over to the Middle East years ago. Y'all remember that? So my point is, he continually proves that he sides with the enemy on every occasion. And so we should not even fix our lips to say that nigga was ever a leader.
We
give our children books and teach our children about our history. We say, that was a dumb nigga. That was my nigga. That was a good nigga. That was a stupid nigga. That nigga hurt us. Our children need to know this at 10, 5, and 6. Don't call that fool your leader.
This is the way I see it like this. The leaders of black people should be the man and your father, a person, a grandfather, your people that's in your community, people that's doing things, and people who live by example. You know, those are leaders. People go out there and do something.
In your social structure, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hold on.
Those are leaders.
Well, let me ask you a question then. If these people are gonna be, you shouldn't have no leaders. And you talk about nationhood, nation building. If you got a new nation, a black nation, shouldn't you have like a president or somebody that's in charge?
Well, exactly. Let me speak on this.
The leadership we used to do would require them to serve us, and they weren't called leaders.
Right, they're called public servants. You know, a person who runs for office is a public servant. He serves the public.
Right.
He the best of the public. See, the whole thing is this. This is how we have in Black America. There's no respect for the average person. But somebody calls himself a leader of Black people, like for Mr. Farrakhan, this is one thing I'll tell you about them. He doesn't have any respect for Black people at all. And basically, a couple of years ago, he made a comment that when Barack Obama got elected, he was asking, "Oh, you think Barack Obama is president? I'm your leader. How are you just going to basically proclaim yourself a leader over 43 million people with all kinds of intelligences, differences, ideologies, and you're just going to proclaim yourself?" And then somebody's not telling Mr. Farrakhan, he's sounding like a fool. He's making a fool out of himself. You know,
I've been trying to tell
people,
you.
No, what I'm saying is he may be a fool, but I don't know if he's an enemy. He's a fool. He's an old fool. You know, but my point is this. When you talk about nationhood, first of all, when you talk about a leader, gives accountability. If you embezzle funds and whatnot, guess what? We throw you in jail for 30 years. You know, we strip you of everything, take all your assets and everything like that. See, in Black America, people can basically get funds for their organization, everything, misuse it, whatever like that, do whatever they want, and there's no accountability. Because this is what I'm saying. This is going to blow your minds when I say this. Because you know what they're going to do every time the leader gets in trouble? They're going to say, "Oh, see, I'm being persecuted by white people." Because they know we don't hold them accountable. And then when they get in trouble with white people, like Jesse Jackson's son or whoever, this is a racial witch hunt and everything. And we basically rally to them and everything like that because they get us focused on white people so they can keep doing what they're doing. And what they're doing is no good. That's what I mean by the
look
at
it, man. Look, check it out. Now a lot of them put their own asses out there. They did it themselves. But here's the thing: when you go ahead, because we was talking, you know, the brother was on earlier, was talking about here. There's nobody to really confront these motherfuckers. You know, go ahead and tell them that, hey, look, you know, you're not going ahead and point out the obvious. They are not there to go ahead and tell you really what's going on. They're there to go ahead and fulfill a role and to go ahead and be like the bootlicking house niggas that they have on Fox News. Just they got the same types on all these other stations. And that's our biggest problem. But we don't have nobody to go up against that shit. And then when they go ahead,
that's why I tell you. You know, these platforms.
We need to confront it in a sense of publicly in the media to battle that. What we need to do is simply educate people in the media on the issue of the talented 10th brainwashing process that has ruined our community. And that's who they are.
They are not
our leaders. They are the leadership for Europeans inside of our community, and we need to call that out publicly.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. Education is the key to a whole lot of shit. Brother Poppy,
yeah,
you got to
like
hear.
When someone tells me that, our black leaders are doing, you know, no offense to anybody, that tells me that basically they're not reading between the lines. That these people were never designed to. You know, let me give you an example. When people thought, Barack Obama got elected, all this is going to happen. Well, you have black mayors for a generation or two right now. Has anything ever changed? And then you say these are black mayors. What makes you think a black president is going to be doing?
Well, hold on. With being the guy in charge of the most powerful nation on the planet, okay, and that fucker walked these goddamn streets, he did do a few things for some people who were like steel mill workers and stuff like that, but he was on these streets, he didn't been shot at, and I keep saying this. He know firsthand what was going on over here. His wife wife grew up here. So don't tell me that the man in charge of the most powerful fucking nation.
Rob, let me say something about this.
No. Don't tell me
right.
about what's
That's
going on
right,
over here.
Brother.
Hold on.
No. Let me tell you about something.
Listen,
hold on.
Now, you can't tell me ahead just
hey,
because
brother.
You got the black man.
Rob,
they can
Rob,
do so
Rob.
Much.
Look, Rob, I agree with you. Let me.
I'm not
going to
get away with
had,
that. He can't. He
Rob.
Can do a lot more. He just proved to me that this guy. That shit is nothing but he's just nothing but a fucking puppet. He's just like every other fucking president that been every other president.
Rob, let me say something. When Ronald Reagan was president and then just first George Bush got in office, there was DC's violence was so bad that there was shots hitting White House, right? Now
Taylor, you're missing my point here.
Let me say this.
Every white president has done something for white folks.
That's my point.
Let me finish. At the same time, they collected my tax money. So
Rob, let me finish what I'm saying. Rob, let me finish what I'm saying. Now, when first George Bush was in there, crime was so bad in D.C. that there were people, diplomats, afraid to come to the city. That's the capital, right? He couldn't do the president of the United States with powers to do anything. Newt Gingrich comes in there with this contract with America. You know what they did? They took away D.C.'s sovereignty. You know, and put it under like a martial law or whatever. They start governing the D.C. from the Congress, you know, and say, look, we're going to shut D.C. down. We're going to basically just take away your, strip the mayor of his power, took over the police department, took over everything in D.C., you know, and basically said, yo, just deal with it. As simple as that, you know. And that's just what it was.
Well, look, let me show you something. Let me show you that, hey, look, you know, that all that was to go ahead. They stripped the mayor of his power was to go ahead and keep white folks more afraid. That's what that was. To go ahead and say black people can't govern themselves. They undermine a lot of shit that black people do. I get that. I understand that. But right now, you the president. You the motherfucker in charge. You the CEO. You the head nigga in charge. And you going to tell me that he can't go ahead and deal with executive orders to go ahead and put some shit in place? Please, I don't believe that. I really don't believe that. He just shows me. And you go ahead and look at his actions up until this point with the bailouts and all these other groups he's going ahead and handling. Dude, no. He's following their agenda. They pull his fucking purse. They yank his goddamn chain and he get the move.
He couldn't change this situation here in this city, brother.
He ain't no way you're going to get me to believe that he couldn't change this situation here. Wait a minute. Him being a community organizer and knowing he was walking these streets, knowing what the fucking shit people lack and what they need over here, you can't get me to believe that, homie.
I'm not doubting you, Rob. We're saying the same thing. All I'm saying is basically you got to understand it's all politics. You know, Barack Obama is not a dictator; he's a politician. You know,
the bottom line is he got
to get Democrats reelected in Congress in 2013, and he got to basically make sure a Democrat gets in the White House in 2016. That's all it's about.
It ain't about politics when people and these kids dying. It shows that that's the policy.
Wait a minute.
Hold on. That's the policy to go ahead and help black people remain in the position that they in. He proved it to me. And people used to say that. He proved it. Rob,
that is the country we live in. You know, what's different from now than 400 years ago? You forget we came over here and changed? You know, ain't nothing changed, man. That's America. America's going to be like that 1,000 years from now. I don't care if you could basically have an all-black government in America, and it's still going to be the same thing.
And you know what we need to teach our children? That disappointment comes from unrealistic expectations.
That's what I was saying the other day. It's about expectations.
We have unrealistic expectations.
I agree with that, brother, 100%.
Disappointment. And so
that's why we get frustrated, because we got these expectations of these people, and they can't deliver. I know what Obama can do. I know what Jesse Jackson can do. I know what Frank, I know what these people can do. I know what they're all about. You know, that's why I'm
going to be they were never created to serve our interests.
No one has.
You know, it's like the story I tell children when I'm a storyteller. It's the crab that's trying to teach the children to walk straight. And everybody knows crabs walk sideways. So it's impossible.
Let me give you an example. Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson comes in, and basically, if you study his career, right? Every time there's a situation with GM, or if there's a labor strike and everything like that, they call up Jesse Jackson. You know, hey, look, we need you over here and whatnot. Why? Because he's going to come out there and attach the black struggle, plight, and everything to auto workers. Auto workers could be greedy, you know, and just want more money and try to gouge a company. But all you have to do is call a civil rights leader up, and they lock on with some auto executives and everything like that with Teamsters and say, we shall overcome. The media and all the stuff like that, man, it's powerful. And the Republicans and everybody look like, oh, man, you're dissing the poor, the working man. It's a game. You know, and Jesse Jackson gets paid very well for doing this.
Of course. And that's the problem as well in our community. We're trained to know, we're taught that the white man's our only enemy, the devil. You understand? But in 2013, we've got to watch our brothers and sisters now. You understand? Because our brothers and sisters are working willingly for the best interests of the devil. Like Luisa, he knows better. He knows better because I read the teachings of the great Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And the great Honorable Elijah Muhammad already told you how to see a house nigger and see them for what they do. That's why he can't tell those members to go read Elijah Muhammad's books. He has to direct them to Scientology. Because he goes against everything that Elijah Muhammad was talking about. He spoke about the hypocrite in great depth. And he is that hypocrite today in 2013.
No, I think a little more complex than that, brother.
What do you mean then?
That's a little too simplistic, my brother.
Complex. It is simple. I believe.
Yeah, it's a little more to it than that, man. It's not that simple, man. If it was just that easy, man, we would have been out of the situation a long time ago. You know,
I don't think that we're not trained in 2013. We don't know who's working against us.
Yesterday, I was out getting gas, right? Proof of the pudding, what I was saying. You know, football season kicked off, so all these black people angry and everything. Soon football season kicked off and everything like that. Black people, white people know us very well. They're going to go back to basically, what's your team, who's the scorer, who's going to be the quarterback, who's going to the Super Bowl, and everything like that. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, niggas are comfortable. There's no doubt about it.
And the bottom line is, the average brother's out there trying to make ends meet, pay his bills, do what he got to do, pay his child support, and just survive. You know, and they know that. As long as you're on that survival mode and everything, and it's all about that dang, getting that dollar, making sure your rent is paid and your lights are on and everything like that, that's what our religion is in America. Our religion is survival. You know, that's what black America is right now. We're in survival mode. You know, ain't nothing else. Ain't nobody else saying anything. It's about until somebody comes up with a better plan, how to get to the next level, that person will be listened to. But other than that, man, you know, let me give you an example. Al Sharpton had a freaking rally, right after Trayvon Martin or whatever rally it was. Nobody showed up. You know, nobody showed up. Why? Because people are basically like, man, come on. You know, we've been through all this. We know that the bottom line is when you have these marches and whatnot, your name is getting front page news and on news media and everything. You just prop yourself up. Black people aren't stupid. I thought nobody showed up to these rallies and events.
Hold on, let me make this point here. Look, you got them brothers going in talking about who's going to go ahead and win the football game and all that other shit. You know where that comes from? That comes from the teaching. You taught from the time you get into the head start, the earliest time you get into school, that, hey, look, nothing else you go ahead you want to deal with being black is relevant. You go ahead right now, there's this little sister in Oklahoma that was told she couldn't come to school with her dreads on. Okay, that kind of shit's been going on for a long time. Nothing to go ahead and deal with your Africanness has been promoted in the schools.
No,
okay.
And
check this out. And I think it's in Ohio. They're doing the same thing over there, telling you you can't come to school with Afro puffs.
All right, we had Rob, right here in Hampton, Virginia.
Hold on,
Hampton
bro.
University,
hold on.
The president is black.
Hold on a minute.
Dreads are banned on campus.
Wait a minute. Yeah, you still got that. That's the miseducation and the re-education of our people has been going on for a long time. It ain't so much that, hey, look, that they want to go ahead and jump into football. And look, they wouldn't even know that if they were taught science, if they were taught numbers, if they were taught how money works. They're not being taught that in these schools.
Yeah, but
these schools are doing what
they're
doing.
African schools are coming over here learning all that. The African students are coming over here learning real well. They're going back to Nigeria.
Wait a minute. I just said that, hey, these schools over here are doing what they're supposed to do as far as black people are concerned. Let's think about that for a minute. They are doing what they're supposed to do to re-educate and miseducate black people. It's a difference.
Exactly.
Go ahead and put a black school
Rob,
up in a white school, and you can see the difference in what's being taught in the schools.
Didn't we basically march for integration? Didn't we basically say we want to be American? Didn't we want to basically, every time we look up, when you hear some black, and this thing burns me up the most, right? When some black actress gets up there and says, there's not enough roles for black women up there. And they say, okay, we'll give you some roles, right? And then with the roles they give you, you a hoe, you this, you a baby mom, wanna, now you see black women got roles. Is that what it's all about? You even had a situation where black porn people talking about, well, black porn stars aren't getting paid more. And you got black people ready to embrace that cause.
They'd rather go ahead and have you be a worker, a consumer of their products, instead of going ahead and being a person that's in charge of the company or a person that's
exactly.
going ahead owning the football team. They're not gearing us up for that. Put it
right.
early on.
Well, that's why I don't watch football.
I don't watch football. The Rockefellers and the DuPonts and the Carnegies at their big meetings back in the 30s said the same thing you just said.
Exactly.
They said the exact same thing. They said as long as we control the finances, it doesn't matter who the government is.
Right.
And as long as we can make the black people think that they're going to be free or think that they can be equal and never provided, then we will always stay on top. That's what they all said, the ones with the money.
When
the lawyer stepped to one of them presidents in the 60s, he said, you need to do this, that, and the other. I think it was Lyndon B. Johnson. And Johnson said, you're absolutely right. Everything you said I need to do is correct. I just have one request for you. Make me. That's where our politics should begin. It should begin with a presidential decree that told a nigga in the civil rights struggle, make me, nigga. That's where we
Let me tell you why the black people in America never had no real leverage. They gave the illusion of power and everything. Then when you ask for too much, they'll take it all back. That's why Martin Luther King fell out with Johnson. He fell out with Johnson and he fell out with Nixon eventually. That's why he was taken out. Simple as that.
Now there's one thing that I would add to what you said earlier, brother. What's your name?
Carla.
Okay. But one thing you said earlier was that the people, what did you say? You said, oh, man, I lost it. My fault. Your name threw me off. But go ahead.
Continue. Like I said, the school system is doing what they're supposed to be doing. People are not in it. If you want to go ahead and change a whole lot of this stuff going on with black on black crime. Now, educate these kids. They don't want to educate them. Go ahead
and
get
the only education they're getting.
Oh, hold on, brother.
And all these other people, Rick Ross. That's the only education people can be getting.
Wait a minute. The only thing they're trying to do is get them go ahead and go from the womb to prison, because that getting them in prison makes money for a lot of individuals.
Exactly.
And they paint us as going savages and ruthless individuals and all that other stuff. And they do a damn good job of it, because the individuals that are supposed to be speaking on our behalf are not addressing those issues.
Let me ask you a question, Rob. Let me ask you a question. Right now, what I'm finding now, I deal with a lot of Africans in Africa and everything like that. I'm finding now that the average African has, because of the media purposely exporting this garbage culture out of black America, the average Nigerian is like, well, we don't want Kenyan or whatever like that. We don't want that here. We don't want that garbage here. Yeah, gangbangers, like, that's what they think we're all about over here. Because we allowed the narrative to
somebody, black America,
be the role model for the whole black world. Now it's
Let me show you something else. Have you looked at the hip hop scene coming out of France and the hip hop scene coming out of Ghana? Look at them. Do a little bit more research and see what that's like. Okay, it's a damn near identical to what the fuck is going on, and you know who's paying for that?
Wait a minute, you know who they blame for that?
The individuals you blame these white producers over here because they funding that same shit.
Yeah, but the bottom line is Rob. But the difference is the white producers aren't on BET every day. It's not touring France with his wife and his little baby daughter, and Russell Simmons is not even making the real money.
They can sit in the room and go ahead and set up their teleconference and
They don't need that.
They can set up a teleconference and send out their people and never even leave this fucking country. Never even leave they hole in the ground. And that's what they've been doing.
They've been fixing it from here. But, brother, the thing I was trying to say earlier was when you said that the only card that the blacks in the South had to play was Exodus, and that's not true. The other card we could have played was consolidation in the seven southern states and a takeover and not a makeover.
I agree with that. But you gotta understand something at the time. White people had a card to play too, you know, which was violence. And the violence, had the backing of the militia. And you remember Nat Turner's rebellion and also John Brown's rebellion was put down by the federal government. The federal government, if it came down to black people having an insurrection, the federal government had the obligation to back up the state, and white people controlled the state, you know. So look at Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street. We did that in Black Wall Street. It was burned to the ground. You know?
But you have to understand something else.
To the ground.
Wait. Don't take it out of context. You're right. But keep it in context. We also had a Seminole War with black people being the primary rulers of the entire South and the Native Americans, conducting a sustained war from the mid-1600s All the way until 1845, they sustained a war against the American government that they almost won.
Let me finish that part because there's something I want to add to that.
Within the context of all of that occurring, then you have the government stepping up the effort against the slave rebellion because the risk of a unified East Coast black population with the Caribbean and with other black populations was too great.
I want
us to be clear. In our history, we have them on the ropes, and we're taught that we were just slaves.
Right, brother, I agree with you. I know about the Stonewall Rebellion in Florida. I know about the Toussaint Overture. The fact of the matter is that it was a black Haitian that was actually a governor of much of America during the Napoleon abandoning the Louisiana territory, you know?
Right.
It was a black,
there's a book that people need to read called Black Seminole Legacy, and I told Chef Rob this before on a previous show, Black Seminole Legacy in North American Politics, where in the records of Congress, it states that the Negro in Florida, remember, in the colonial days when they were expanding west, Florida included all of the South over to damn near Texas. So let's not get out of context of what we're talking about. And they said that the Negro is clearly, this is clearly a Negro war because the Negroes clearly rule the Indians in Florida. That's what the Jesuits said to Congress, and it's on record.
Yeah, but it's the whole
what I'm suggesting to you is let's not take it out of context with a continual struggle.
All right, well let me add to that and complement.
With the continual struggle and fight with not only a homeland in this land, but creating a homeland in this land to have a government that can interface with any homelands we would create in any other lands like Africa or other places. Because if you don't set up an infrastructure with government to interact with each other, you can't do what we're suggesting.
Right, brother, man, we're on the same page. Now, to add to that was the whites decided, you know, we have to do something about the free black population, right? So what they did was they brought, 4 million Irish to the United States. Germans, for the sole purpose of shoring up the white population.
Told him to add a sailor to him. Where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice, and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. Here again, we have a walking God going from one place where he is to another. Here we see him not being able to find Adam and Eve, who were able to hide from him.
That's Perry. Look here,
Perry
brothers.
Still, oh boy.
I'm gonna have to get up out of here.
All right, Rob.
We can go ahead and continue this here tomorrow. I got an obligation. I got
to be back.
And I appreciate you, brothers, coming by. It's been a great conversation.
No problem, man. All right, y'all take care. Good brother, brother Kmet, another brother, man. Good talking to you.
All right,
thanks
all
a lot.
Hotel.
All right, peace.